51 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. Tip times are reportedly set for the Care Source Invitational from Lindner Family Tennis Center in Cincinnati. For the Rebound Rundown's Paul Frischner, Ohio State and Cincinnati will play its exhibition at 3 October 7th with Xavier and Dayton to follow. Tickets go on sale Friday. College football, Nebraska head coach Matt Rhule kicks off the last session of Big Ten Media Days at 12:30, with Indiana head coach Kurt Cignetti to close at 1:45. NBA per ESPN, the league will not play any preseason games in the Middle East for the first time in 5 years amid conflict in the region. The Cavs were among those discussed to play in the games. Soccer, all 55 UEFA federations voted to boycott FIFA tournaments, including the World Cups, if it moves forward to sell stake to private investors. FIFA President Gianni Infantino has set a September 19th deadline for associations to accept the plan. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
All right, back at it. Rothman and Ice, Anthony Rothman, Matty Ice Hayes, and the Cannon. It's good to have you guys aboard on a thirsty Thursday. How you feeling?
What up? I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling good. What's your drink of choice on a thirsty Thursday? We got what? Gatorade, water. What we housing today?
What do I have today? I have an off brand of vitamin water.
Okay, that'll work. That works too. And I just got straight H2O over here, man. So no.
Oh, quality H2O.
Yeah, some of that quality H2O. Yeah. So yeah, all good in the hood today, big dog. Life good for you right now?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I think that there is a difference between an off brand and a real.
A little different taste to it.
In certain flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Not all flavors.
Okay.
Specifically the orange flavor.
Okay. What are you saving? About $1.50 on that?
You're probably saving
$3?
Oh, more. With a case?
I'm just saying, like, per bottle, what do you think it is? $1.50?
I don't know if you're saving that much per bottle, but it'd be close. Okay. I could do the math on that.
Okay.
But yeah, that's what you
got
to ask yourself.
I got you.
Are you willing to sacrifice and have a horrible, bitter aftertaste to save a buck? Today, the answer was yes.
Absolutely, yes.
All right, so we got a lot for you today. We got Pat Murphy live from Chi-Town at 12:30. You know what we're going to have to do?
What's that?
We're going to have to, I think because of the time, there'll be a conflict for him. We're going to have to yank him out of the Matt Rhule presser.
Oh, I'm sure he's going to be so disappointed about that.
He might. You never know what Matthew might be tossing out there. And then we'll do a little Browns stuff with our friend Jake Burns at 1:30. Gold Jacket Thursday, John Riggins, the Diesel.
Let's go.
One of the best. When you needed a yard, when you needed a touchdown, you handed the ball to John Riggins. Period. End of story. He's that guy. But he has a great comeback story, mm-hmm. and a guy that probably questioned whether or not he was going to be the right fit in places. You know, would he be a blocking fullback? Could he be the guy, the bell cow back? But I'll tell you this, make no mistake, that guy was a football player and he made it all the way to the Hall of Fame. So we'll have him at 2:30. I did see some good news in the last few minutes.
What do you got?
The good news is that Shamar Stewart from Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport have reported that when he was carted off yesterday after that scary-looking knee injury, it's just a hyperextended knee. He'll get treatment. The belief is no ligament damage. He's good, quote, one source said.
Okay, that is good news, because this was heading down a path of another clunky training camp for Shamar Stewart. Last year, this time, we're sitting here talking about the contract dispute between he and the front office, and then he wasn't able to get going, and then that's just not what you need. And so hopefully this is a sooner rather than later he can get back to practice, because he needs it and they need it. And so this would have been really unfortunate if we would have heard from Schefter or whoever that he's going to miss the entire training camp, or this is going to bleed into the regular season, mm-hmm. and all of that. They just have so much work to do on defense, and he's such an important piece to what they need to be, because he was a first round pick. That is really good news that he can return to practice, it sounds like, pretty soon, or hopefully pretty soon.
His leg looked like it was on backwards.
Yeah, it was tough.
When you showed me the video. Now, this is the world we live in. I'll define the world we live in. Sky suffers a scary moment. Well, can't really put any pressure on it. Probably feels weird. Can't trust it. Let's get the cart. Mm-hmm. Let's carry him off. Let's cart him off. And everyone's like hoping. We haven't heard anything. So this defines, you know, an SI back in the day used to do this little article that said a sign of the apocalypse. And this is just another sign of the world we live in. Here's a comment under the headline of that he's going to be okay. Ready?
Yeah. Right.
Getting carted off the field like you tore every ligament in your lower body. Just to find out you have a minor knee hyperextension is world-class preseason drama. Give this man an Oscar.
Let me guess. The profile pic for that person is a Steeler, Ravens, or Browns fan.
I looked at that. I looked for that. Okay. Our minds are the same. I looked in the profile. There is no
AFC.
There's no fandom.
Okay.
It's more football and NBA. And the avatar is just the goats of every sport.
Oh.
Like Shohei and Jordan and Messi and Brady and Djokovic and Kobe. And like he's got like a, that's it.
We didn't have the goat in there, but that's another conversation for another day. But I think. Uh-huh. I just, man.
Didn't have Wayne Gretzky? Is that what you said?
No, I didn't have LeBron. Okay. Damn. All right. It was like hang in there. Yeah, so for this, the defensive line for Cincinnati is going to get so much focus this year, right? Especially with the addition of Dexter Lawrence, what he should provide, big body guy, middle of the defense, eat up things with the run game, hopefully help out with the pass rush as well. But it's always going to come back to, for me, the Cassius Howells of the world, the Miles Murphys of the world, Boye Mafe, like all these guys.
There's got to be an apostrophe in there. You had a triplet going there. You had the Cassius Howells of the world. And who was next?
Miles Murphy.
Miles Murphy. And then, you didn't give Boye his plural.
Boye Mafe's of the world.
Yes.
All of
it's
those
one of my
guys.
Favorite things that's ever done in broadcasting. Honestly, I really like it. Okay. It acts because it makes it, it sounds bigger.
Okay.
The Matty Ices of the world.
Mm-hmm. Like, we need more of
it's
those.
A team.
We need more of those. More ARs than me.
I'm with you. I feel like this is, they're a little bit of the it team right now. The Ja'Marr Chase fight, and I'll ask you this because I don't know when this slanted in our world, when like fights were deemed stupid and bad and guys losing their cool, and then somewhere along the line it slanted to, oh, this team's coming. They got an edge. Look what's going on here. What's happening in Cincinnati, right? The Bengals, the stripes are back. They're fighting. They're top players winging helmets around. Like, when did it become a good thing? Has it always been that way?
I think it's a good thing when it doesn't happen in bulk, right? Like, if this is a one-off, we get maybe one more of these for the Bengals, then it's like, okay, that's training camp stuff. Down the road, it's usually guys are sick of each other. We're tired of practicing against the same guys for days and weeks on end. You usually see that a couple weeks into training camp. In the first couple of days, it was like, oh, that's a little interesting. But maybe it is a leader in Ja'Marr Chase trying to set some type of tone in his mind, because we've heard stories about that. Hey, we're going to go out here and I'm going to coach. Hey, I'm going to get after you today. Yeah. Try to set a tone for the rest of the team. Maybe that was the case. Maybe it was just two guys talking a whole bunch of trash. Ja'Marr throws his helmet. What's always silly to me is football players squaring up with helmets on. Like, hey, we're going to square up and throw hands. You have a helmet on. I'm going to have a helmet on. It's only going to do damage to one of our hands if we really land a clean punch. That's always the silly part, too. With fighting with helmets on.
I think you want to do the open slap.
Or a mush.
To the ear hole. Because that could create a nice acoustic concussion feel.
What a five fingers say to the face.
That's
AR.
Right.
Slap.
I think the way to go. Open slap.
That's disrespect.
Here's the deal. This is all fine in practice at your own team. That's all fine. And that's why it's being praised today and not looked at as being, why would a leader do this? It's never going to be looked that way. Where it would look that way, and you've heard a lot of people say this, a lot of pros have said this, you know, you play how you practice. And I saw that Houshmandzadeh, the former Bengal, commented on this, and he believed that as long as you can compartmentalize it, but he's the last guy that could do that when it counts in a game.
Yeah, he can't get thrown out of games.
You can't lose him.
Correct.
So the word on, like, nothing happened. Nobody got injured. Right. It wasn't a big deal. In fact, if anything, maybe it'll make them stronger. Mm-hmm. There's an edge to them. That's why it's being praised today, and that's why it made national news. The reason it made national news is because it was Ja'Marr Chase.
Yes.
Because there really wasn't much of a fight.
Yeah, if
this wasn't guys throwing punches. It wasn't guys on the ground.
Yeah.
It was a scrum, guys getting separated. The helmet fling, all right, that was a good visual. You know, that's a little bit immature. You throw a guy's helmet, but it's emotional, right? But the reason that it doesn't matter and the reason it's looked at as being good and that gives the Bengals an edge and they're serious this year, that it shows some fight in them, right? That shows that you care. And it didn't, nobody got hurt. But if this happened in a game and he got tossed, it'd be brutal. He'd be getting killed for it.
Yeah.
The opposite, the fact that this happened in a practice versus a game, if this same thing happened in a game, mm-hmm. he'd be getting roasted for this.
It's one of those things where if you're Zach Taylor, it's probably, hey, Ja'Marr, you know, let's chill out on that. You're way too important to this team moving forward for you to be caught up in some scuffles, and if you were to get hurt in the squabble, that's a horrible, horrible look for him. So hopefully this is a one and done for Ja'Marr, and hopefully we're not talking about, hey, the Bengals keep getting after each other and there's all these fights, because then my mind would go to the chemistry in the locker room. I think you can recover from these things. We've heard teammates talk about these fights all the time, and it seems like cooler heads will prevail, and hopefully that'll be the case. But I do like a little edge to start training camp, especially for a team that hasn't been in the postseason for 3 years. So they got to start doing things a little bit different.
Now, the only thing you would have liked is that the defense won the fight, right? That's what you would have liked. I do like that it's not two guys on the same side. You know, that part of it.
Defense and offense.
Two things on this.
Yep.
One, Burrow weighed in on it, and it was kind of a semi-joke, but semi-serious. He was like, you know, it's always good when you can punch a guy in the face and still line up for the next snap within 15 to 20 seconds. That's ideal. So he was making the reference of, you can get away with that in practice. And then Houshmandzadeh said, you know, again, I don't know Jamar's personality. I know him, but I don't know him like that. Can I get on him in front of a team? And if I can, I am. But I'm also a realist. I've been in that locker room where you get on the wrong player, and he's going to really let everybody know who's running things around here. So, listen, practice scuffle. Maybe they need it. Hopefully they'll be stronger for it. We'll come back. And we'll go to the Buckeyes. Julian in Chicago on the committee. Not that one, his. You'll hear it next. Rothman.
The Reds are on the Fans' family of stations all season long. If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you. Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and the Fan 3. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the rest of the day, we'll see some of those fair weather clouds trying to pop up, but we'll call it mostly sunny for the afternoon. Highs reach the lower 80s. Real nice day out there. Mostly clear skies tonight, 63 for a low. For your Friday, partly sunny skies as some high clouds gradually stream in from the west. We'll see highs right around 86. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
No hot takes, no dancing, plenty of stupid. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The most wonderful people in the history of Western civilization. Rothman and Ice, 97.1 The Fan. It doesn't get any better than this.
Buckeyes blowing it out of Chi-Town.
Before we get into that, I wanted to read you this text from the one and only Bobby Carpenter. He was listening to our Ja'Marr Chase conversation, and he said, you want to hit the throat punch and then wedge your hand under the face mask and try to pop the helmet off. He says that's how you try to get after your teammate. Get that helmet off and then start putting the paws on.
So you're at a major disadvantage once the helmet comes off. So he's saying he's doing the equivalent of the hockey fight. He's trying to pull the jersey over a guy's head. All right, so...
Yeah.
So you do the...
Hit him with a throat punch.
Okay, that's a little excessive. I don't think other teammates are going to want... Hit him just like a semi, just like disable him for a moment.
Just real quick, yeah.
Okay, that's not good. No, Bob, no... No physical to the windpipe. That's not... Oh, we can't do that.
That's
funny. Throat punch.
Then rip the helmet off, and then you... Then you
sounds like
damage.
After you throat punch him, you could do anything you wanted because he'd be
probably
gasping for air and
correct.
Maybe bent over.
Yeah.
Who knows? I remember in one of my favorite sports movies, North Dallas 40, they're getting ready to go play the big game, and there's a fight between the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman. And They start to fight. They were just doing a, kind of a walkthrough, but it was an advanced walkthrough. Like, they were in sweats, but they had pads on and helmets. And so they were trying to give Joe Bob a little more work in there, and he didn't know it. Like, and so Monroe is the offensive lineman, and he's just schooling him, like throwing him aside and all that. He's like, come on, we're supposed to be running this half speed. And he's just getting clowned. And the fight starts, and they want to break it up. One of the assistants wants to break it up. And the head coach, who's up in the scaffold, he just let him go. Mm-hmm. Let him go. So this has been going on for a long, like, mm-hmm. And then after the fight, they're like, oh, they're ready. They're like, that's what they wanted.
It's something that I think we're all used to. It happens all the time. And usually when we get the joint practices, mm-hmm. when things can get even more heated, right? Because now it's another opponent that you can get after. I think it's a fine line you got to walk when you're getting after your own teammates. And it seems like everything is chill down there in Cincinnati after, you know, Jamar. And I think it was Jalen Davis was the guy, I believe, that he was squabbling with.
DJ Turner involved in that?
I heard DJ Turner's name, but I thought I heard Jalen Davis was in the mix as well. But I could be wrong.
So many bodies in there. Who knows?
Exactly.
I couldn't even tell. They were trying to.
Looks like it was Jalen Davis was the helmet that got tossed.
Well,
maybe DJ trying to come to his, you know, this guy's defense. He's another cornerback. Boy.
The helmet toss is. It's
I yanked your chain. Aqib Talib style.
It's pretty demoralizing.
Right. It's like when Aqib Talib was doing that, was it Crabtree?
Yeah.
Like snatching a man's chain like that, it's demoralizing, disrespectful, all of it.
The throwing of the helmet, though. Here, you want your helmet?
Go get it.
It's like a little kid on the playground. You want your ball? Go get it. All right, we'll get back to the Buckeyes here. Julian Sain and the boys were in Chi-Town talking about this year. And I think what's really interesting about this year is that it's kind of Jeremiah Smith and everybody else. And it's not that those guys won't become household names. They may become that. But last year, you kind of knew what you had. You had Jeremiah. You had Carnell. They ate up everything. Outside of that, you went right to the tight end and Max Clair. But it was those two guys with somewhere around 140 receptions combined. And they had most of the touch, if not all of the touchdowns, over 20 touchdowns combined. And so this year, outside of Jeremiah Smith, we know about Chris Henry from the spring game, Brandon Innett, certainly we know, but it feels like a deeper rotation this year than in the past based on whatever depth they have. And I've mentioned about, is this going to be running back by committee or is this going to be Bo's show? Is he going to get 200 carries? And maybe it'll be situational during games or what the score is and all of that and how you want to manage a guy's workload and carries going all the way through a tough season. But at the receiver, it's Jeremiah Smith and everybody else. And that's it's kind of cool that you might see a guy that could pop off this year, McEwen, Parker, Boyd, anybody that could jump up and become somebody Buckeye fans really know. And Julian was asked about the receiver room and that committee.
I think it's very helpful to us. When you're able to sub receivers in and out and get different guys in there and keep guys fresh, it's very hard on the defense because, you know, they're rarely like subbing out like corners a bunch. Like they're keeping corners in most of the time and those guys are getting tired. So if we're able to have, you know, guys who are very talented out there and we have a bunch of them, it's what you want as a quarterback.
You know, I think a similar thing could be said about your defensive line and wearing down an opposing offensive line, right? We've heard Larry Johnson mention that. Another defensive lineman mentioned that, hey, if we can get a room that's got depth in it, we can wear down an offensive line. And I think that's what Julian's talking about is secondary's not really rotating much. If we can have waves of bodies with different looks too that we can throw at people, that can be very successful. I love that you brought up Carnell and Max Clair out the door. Fourth overall pick, Carnell take. Max Clair was a second round pick by the Rams. That's going to be interesting to see how we look back at that if Max Clair has, you know, a decent NFL career, which I think he has a chance to do. But this is one of the first times for me personally to where I'm heading into the season questioning a little bit of what's going to come out of the wide receiver room outside of Jeremiah Smith, because I really don't know. got to trust the history of this program and what they've done, but got a new wide receiver coach in the building now and some guys now that have an opportunity to make a name for themselves. And so you remove Max, you remove Carnell, and especially Carnell's big play ability. That somebody's got to step up and grab a hold of that role, because this guy in Carnell was third in the conference in yards per catch. And in every game but three a year ago, he had at least one catch of 20 yards. So we're talking six games last year for Carnell where he had catches of at least 40. So somebody's got to grab a hold of that role. Maybe it doesn't have to be all the time the way it was for Carnell, but where are the big plays going to come from opposite Jeremiah Smith from the pass catchers?
If I was one of these other guys, Maddie, I'd be loving life. Not because I feel like I could be the guy, but the fact that the attention that Jeremiah Smith is going to command from defenses is awesome for everybody else.
Absolutely.
It really is. And it's not that they won't be covered. Yeah. It's just there will always be a distraction on a defense when he's on the field. Where is he? Who's got him? How are they shadowing the coverage? What are we doing with Jeremiah Smith? Yeah. And the other guys will have a chance to really make a mark, especially with a quarterback who's coming back for another year, who's going to be going through progressions better. He's just going to have a better feel for it. Yeah. I think everyone's trying to predict the same thing, and that's Chris Henry Jr. right now is known by Buckeye fan, and he's known by recruiting people.
Yeah.
He's not really truly known by the country. We haven't heard his name tossed out like, oh, get ready for this guy. And he is the one. He's the one that could become this year's Carnell Tate. But the other guys are going to be counted on a lot as well. And there's competition there, which is great. So they brought in two transfers, potentially to be starting. And Henry is so gifted anyways, a five-star guy, and he's going to push right away. So the cool part about it is you got major competition in that room with it still being a mystery. So I kind of like where they are depth-wise. Jeremiah's got to get his touches, and that's going to be a concerted effort. You go back into his stat line from last year, and there was one game, the irony of all games, was that his least productive game as far as catches and yards was the Michigan game.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's fine. They were obviously very worried about him and should be.
That's why it was great to have Carnell.
Yeah. You know? He was 3 for 40,
yeah.
and that was technically his least productive game. Carnell's line against, I don't have it right now.
The Michigan line?
Yeah, I was trying to find it again.
Well, we know he's got the historic
now post. He's in the NFL.
He's got that amazing post. I'm going to find that.
But the point is that if you go into their stats from last year, it was the two of them. And it's okay if it's just two guys and the other guys again, if you really have a true Robin to the Batman.
And that's my question. Who is that Robin this year? And it may be as simple as it's Chris Henry, because he is supposed to be the next guy in line to be an elite playmaker here at Ohio State. And so, you know, in a perfect world, not having to rely on a true freshman, I think, is a good thing. But in situations like this, especially at that position, we've seen that guys can come in and be impactful right away. Carnell.
5 for 82.
Yep, and a tutty.
Yep. So, and he was the leading guy. Now, you got 117 yards out of Bo Jackson that day in the snow, and he had a very efficient day from saying outside of the very early interception that got everybody on tilt for a second. All right, we're going to come back in 2 minutes, and we'll go to Chi-Town and talk to our friend Pat Murphy. He was in a one-on-one with Coach Day and others. We'll get his insight next. Rothman
PSA.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
True to his name, Matty Ice wears a winter coat in the middle of summer. He lives the gimmick, man. You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, he's the beat writer for Bucknuts 24/7, CBS Sports. And he's in Chi-Town this week covering the Big Ten football preseason meetings. He's the one and only Patrick Murphy. The Murph Dog is back. How's the city treating you?
It's good. It's good. It's been fun. It's kind of sad. It's the last day, but then we roll right into fall camp next week. So we're off and running.
Let me ask you this. My theory on the podium stuff with Coach. Coach will be up there for 15 minutes. I assume they tell him to give an opening statement. Some guys go longer than others, but most of these coaches have been going like 10 minutes on the opening statement and then taking 3 to 5 minutes of questions. And then the questions seem to come not from that school's beat reporters. And my theory on this, when I used to cover it, is a lot of guys have their own agenda. They have their own story they want to write, and they don't want to burn their question in front of the group. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Obviously, you've done this plenty. I think if you just take Ryan Day, for example, I think he talked for about 10 minutes, like you said, kind of thanking everybody. And then I think he took 3 questions afterwards, and then none of them were from any of us on the Ohio State beat. You know, like PJ Fleck got 2 questions because he talked for so long. I'm not sure who they were all from. But yeah, I think people, you know, it's different when it's on TV and things like that. I mean, we're still not, you know, getting anything exclusive out of a lot of this, but yeah, I think you're spot on. I think most of the questions come when the cameras aren't live, I guess I should say, because everyone's still filming.
Yeah. So you've interviewed him several times. You've gone into preseasons before. I loved when Coach Day said yesterday that every coach is going to say they had a great summer. But you can get a feel for this stuff. You can get a feel for how much he likes his team, likes his chances, strengths, weaknesses. We've heard a lot about the schedule, that they'll be battle-tested no matter where they are. But can you kind of give us a little insight on how you observed him this week in confidence and questions and all that?
Yeah, I think he's very comfortable. And I felt this for really the last year after winning that national championship. Like, it just took a little weight off of him. Now, when we talked to him, he said, you know, the pressure is always the same, right? And the expectation is to win every game. But I think he knows what he's got coming back. I think in years when he has a returning starting quarterback, which only has happened, this will be the 3rd time, like, that makes him feel good about the offense, because he knows, hey, I don't have to get a guy ready. You know, I think he likes the talent. Obviously, they have to figure out the offensive line. But the defense was one area he pointed to, and we've talked about all offseason of, like, we have a lot of talent. We have a lot of new faces. We still have some questions. And I think that's probably where, if he were to say his biggest concern is just like figuring out how that's all going to work. And obviously has a lot of trust in Matt Patricia. But no, I think he's confident going into the season because he knows he continues to have one of the best rosters and one of the best staffs with 2 former NFL head coaches available to him. So, yeah, I think there's just the quiet confidence that he's really exuded for much of his career, but especially these last 2 seasons.
You know, you touched on some of the questions he may have about the defense in his mind right now. Murph, when you look at the defense on paper, what questions do you have heading into camp next week?
Well, I think the big one that we keep talking about is, how do you replace those 3 guys that went towards the top of the NFL draft? And look, Ohio State replaces good players every year, right? But, you know, Caleb was different, just the way he could do all sorts of different things. We're talking to Jalen McClain about how they would just like put him in positions where they knew the play was headed because he would definitely make the play. And this year they're going to do things a little bit differently because they don't have a Caleb Downs. Sonny and Arvell, you know, they'll replace talent, but you just can't find 2 physical freaks like that. Like, that was a rarity to have 2 of those guys at the same time. So I think the defense is going to be fine. I think there's a potential that they could have the best defense in the country with Matt Patricia and the talent they have. I just think it's going to be different, and it may take a little bit of time. Like last year, despite replacing 8 starters also, they came out and leaned on that defense week 1 against Texas, right? This year, maybe you have to lean on the offense a little bit more early as they sort of figure some things out defensively. But the talent is there. The guys they brought in, I really like, especially in the secondary. So I think it's a really good group. It just, you know, it's different than a year ago when you kind of knew some of the guys, even though there were a lot of new faces.
All right, let's lean into that offense then for a second, and this offensive line, because all we've heard is how awesome it's going to be. So you tell me, what is the big, massive change or experience-wise that you feel from last year during the Big Ten Championship and the playoff to now? What is the big transformation of the offensive line for Buckeye fan to be that confident that they are going to be all world?
Well, I think the experience that you mentioned is huge. And I know that not all of it was great experience, those last 2 games. But when we talked to Luke Montgomery and Carson Hinsman in the spring, they both talked about, you know, what those 2 games kind of showed them and where they need to be in those biggest games of the season. And they're going to be a lot of them this year. So I think, you know, learning from that and continuing to improve this offseason was important for the guys returning. I also think you can reconfigure this offensive line if, say, Austin Sereveld moves to right guard and Ian Moore steps up and can be your left tackle. Like, now all of a sudden, I think the pieces fit a little bit better. I just think Austin is, while he can play tackle and he played tackle well last year, I think guard makes more sense, assuming you have somebody to replace him at tackle. You know, Ryan talked yesterday about Phillip Daniels and sort of where he ends up on the offensive line. And I also thought it was interesting that he said he would like to have that configuration sort of locked down by practice 6, 7, 8, which I did not expect him to put a number on, but knowing they want to get this figured out quickly leads me to believe, hey, we already have a pretty good idea of what we want to do here. We just want to get out there and kind of go through the start of practice and make sure things are moving in the direction we thought.
We were reacting to a clip from Julian Sand, and he was talking about the depth in the wide receiver room and how maybe we could be looking at a few guys, a handful of guys, maybe plus this year that are going to be contributing. When you look at the room and how that's set up right now outside of Jeremiah Smith, how deep do you think that room will be this season?
I think it's got to be deeper than it's been in recent seasons. You know, I think back to, you know, early days of Brian Hartline and kind of the way they rotated with, you know, Paris and KJ and Terry McLaurin and Benjamin, all those guys. Like, I think it may be more of that, along with Jeremiah obviously being the mainstay and maybe Brandon Innes as well. You know, obviously a new position coach is going to do something different, right? And we haven't seen that in a long time. But I just think there isn't that second star that has emerged yet. And maybe somebody does, but I do think it could be Jeremiah and then sort of a platoon of guys that can all do different things and operate the way you need them to, kind of rotating in and still being productive. Like, they have to be productive because teams are going to focus on Jeremiah as much as ever. And so they're going to need these other guys to step up. And they seem very confident, even though it's some, you know, lesser known names than they've had in the past, but still they very much believe in the talent.
It's amazing you said that, because I agree that you look back at that team and they must have had 6 or 7 guys that had 20 or more catches.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not even including like J.K. Dobbins, like who probably caught 20, 25 passes. So you're right. It was they all had a great name. Like, they all kind of became household names in a way in that receiving room. But yeah, it does feel like it's Jeremiah and everybody else. The Chris Henry effect is, it's just the drama's going to be there, right? Even from game one, like, does your mind tell you that he's playing a pivotal role in game two against Texas or no?
I think it's really up in the air. I think, you know, we can't compare him to Jeremiah and what he did as a freshman. That's just not fair. If he ends up doing something similar, great. But I think it's more similar to like what we saw from Garrett Wilson, where he'll play early, but maybe the impact isn't felt until later in the season as he kind of gets, you know, his feet wet a little and settles into that position. But I do think they're going to need him, because other than Jeremiah, they don't have anybody with that type of body type. And Jeremiah is not even quite the same. He's just a physical freak. So I think, you know, Chris is going to have to grow into being a guy who they can count on. Is that, you know, how many snaps a game? I don't know. How many targets a game? I think that depends on what Chris earns. But, you know, if he didn't come here to sit on the bench his freshman year and they don't have the guys in front of him like they had in the past that kind of kept Emeka Buka and Marvin Harrison out and things like that. So I think he definitely has to step up, but how far that goes, I think we just kind of have to wait and see.
All right, Pat, if you hurry up, you can run back in and hear Matt Rhule talk about how we won't have a Power 4 non-conference game for the next few years.
Oh, good. I'll get right in there then.
If you sprint really fast, you'll make it. Thanks, okay, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys. Good talking
to you. Appreciate you. Yeah, that's our guy, Patrick Murphy. Bucknuts 24/7 on the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. All right, we'll come back, Maddie. We'll stay with the Big Ten versus the SEC, and the big bites back. You'll hear it next. Rothman Trust.
All your favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bo sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's gaudy gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. No one funks up the work microwave like these two. Fish again? You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, Maddie, before you give your update, just to get people up to speed, Bengals edge rusher Shamar Stewart was carted off yesterday. It was a pretty scary-looking knee injury. Suffered a hyperextended knee. He's going to have treatment, but they don't believe there's any ligament damage.
This from Zach Taylor just moments ago. Quote, it'll be several weeks, but very fortunate because it obviously looked bad. The good news is we'll be getting him back sooner rather than later. So that's interesting because on one end you're saying several weeks and the other end you're saying sooner rather than later. Regardless, doesn't sound like AR we're going to be talking about him missing games. We don't know. Fingers crossed on that if you're a Bengal fan, but that is the latest from Zach Taylor. It will be several weeks, which is still a pretty big setback for him because this isn't a guy that is in year four or five that has everything figured out. He's going to be playing catch up yet again in training camp. So that's the bittersweet part of this news still.
He hurt his knee last year late.
Yeah.
I don't remember what exactly. I know they, I think he was on IR for, was he not?
Did he have to sit?
I thought he was.
Okay. I know, I remember the injury. I don't remember how much time he had
to
miss.
It was fairly deep into the season, but he's one of those guys that still has to prove himself.
No doubt.
That's a first round. That's a 17th overall pick.
Yep.
That's not a nothing. And I love to kind of play the game of who they would have or could have taken. Now, they didn't need a Mecca Buka. So it's not like they would have taken him, but my mind goes to, can you imagine having him like on a rookie deal?
Imagine one of he and T would have been pretty disappointed because there's only so many targets to go around, you know?
But yeah, they,
I like that you brought up.
They could add Schlesinger.
Who's a dude for the Browns.
They really could have. He could be in a Bengal uniform right now.
And that's a unit that we're looking at is the linebackers for Cincinnati and where their play will be this season. I like that you brought up where he was drafted. And that's why I've been on Miles Murphy because he was another first-round pick. Miles Murphy over 3 years now has 8.5 sacks. Now, last year it was 5.5, so maybe he's figured something out. But those two guys, when you're drafted in the first round, man, if you're not going to be a star, you got to at least be somebody that – it's going to be consistent with their productivity. And right now, those guys aren't there.
Could have had. Now I'm curious.
I like playing this game, too, though.
Actually, the two, I like the two I want. I'll stay with. Schlesinger was probably the guy.
Okay.
Schlesinger. Luther Burden III went 39. Quality pick. All right. So we're going to get back into the Big Ten versus the SEC. And there's been a lot. It's odd because of all the talk about super conferences and being the best, most powerful conference in America, and the more the merrier, and the SEC has kind of been leading that run. And now all of a sudden it's like they're using a little bit of it that's a disadvantage. And not only are they doing it, like they've got reporters doing it, and they've got people that cover. Now, we've seen it before from the Big Ten side as well. There is no mistaking what's going on here. The Big Ten is racking up titles. The SEC that was dominating titles doesn't have one in the last few years. And all of a sudden it's, well, here's the reason why. No, the Big Ten has had elite teams the last few years, and they've gotten all the way to the end, and they've gotten it done. And so let's just let our guy, Bielema, be the guy that leads the charge because he subtly dropped this. He suddenly,
to see the growth of this league to get to where we are now. I spent a couple years in the SEC, was with Slive, and then transitioned to Sankey. And I just think about it now, everybody's going to have opinions, and obviously they're going to draw the Big Ten SEC and all that goes around about that. But to sit in the room with both of those guys, I think with Tony and the vision and experience that he has, and to be in the room where Sankey, I know he's got to protect the SEC, and they kind of want to live in 2005 forever, but I think the forward thinking of where we are in college football is an awesome thing.
It was so quick. I guess it wasn't subtle, but it was so quick he didn't pause.
He basically
said they're living 20 years in the past.
Yeah. They try to make a claim that they're still the conference, which I don't understand because of what you just mapped out and the run that we've been on with Michigan, Ohio State, and Indiana. Last team standing. You open those throne room doors right now, and the logo sitting on the Iron Throne is the Big Ten logo. They got to do something about it. Don't talk about it. Be about it, Big Ten. But I understand, SEC, excuse me, I understand what he's saying. Like, a lot of this is because of what Nick Saban built. A lot of it. Their confidence, the superiority complex from the SEC fans is because of what Nick Saban did. I mean, Nick Saban, what did he win?
Seven.
Six or seven of those things down there.
Yes.
And so that's when I think that's what he's leaning into. During that window of time that built up so much respect from the college football landscape, because down there in the SEC, as they told us time and time again, it just means more down there. And so you can't be claiming that we're the best when it's really because of Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and some sprinkling in every now and then of some other programs.
I can buy depth of a conference. That's fine. I just don't know whether you'd want why you'd want to sell that. Like I actually understand it. Like, all right, maybe you got more 8-4 teams than anybody else. All right.
Yeah.
That's fine. And maybe you beat each other up. Certain conferences are better, certain leagues are better, certain conferences, like, we get it. Mm-hmm. But
I'm not.
That's the last thing I thought they'd be selling. Honestly, I really thought they'd be selling more of that the marching orders have been told to us, that we've got to find a way when we get in the playoff to get it done. And I don't know about the propaganda of it all. It's just weird. It's weird that, you know, I guess I understand Saban talking about it and other people talking about it, but you don't hear Ryan Day complaining about his schedule this year. Like, honestly, you don't.
Uh-huh.
In fact, if anything, he's doing the right thing by embracing it. And there is risk here. There is risk. We've talked about it. If Ohio State loses to Texas, they cannot slip up before the Indiana game. Like, they just have to, which we don't think they will. But if they did, then the pressure's really on.
Mm-hmm.
And now Ohio State has a big enough brand in an expanded playoff era that maybe, and this is just a maybe, is if they lost three, that somehow they could hang in there. But it's not advised, and it's not ideal. And in the opposite, what do we do when we get to the committee room? We always talk about who have they played, who have they beaten. Like, Notre Dame went through this. They played a couple tough games. They lost them both. They had nothing to stand on. Nothing. And in a year, and they have the biggest brand going. And they certainly could have gotten it.
Yeah.
But it's Texas. Texas lost a bad game. They had some good wins. They didn't get in. Like, I guess these coaches are just year to year, Maddie, walking this tightrope of, do we have enough for our resume, but do we have too much that it might cost us?
Got to handle your own business. That's what it comes down to. I'm not going to feel any sympathy at all for the SEC after they danced on graves for years and years, and they had every right to do so because they were at the top of the mountain. But for right now, They gotta eat a little crow. They gotta eat a little crap right now because they have to reprove to everybody that from top to bottom, we're just the biggest and the baddest. And that's not the case anymore because I think when we entered the NIL and transfer portal era, it took away some of the bite that they had. There's still really good teams and all that in that conference, but they were just able to throw out waves and waves and waves of NFL guys all the time, especially the Bamas and the Georgias of the world. And now they still have elite guys. They just don't have as much depth as they used to. And I think that's changed the game for them just a bit.
It's changed the game for me to build off your NIL conversation. The Big Ten has QBs now. Mm-hmm. They always had good QBs. They didn't have NFL QBs. It didn't feel like in waves. Like, it felt like other conferences were putting out. And now that's given them a huge chance to continue to win titles. But you go back and look at this. The SEC teams are 0-4 against Big Ten teams in playoff games since Georgia beat Ohio State 4 years ago. That's their record.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about your 8-4s in the middle of your pack.
Don't matter.
That's your record.
That's real.
We'll come back top of the hour and hit you with a sports update, and we'll get into who's got the edge, the quarterback or the receiver, in a certain award. Rothman and
Tommy. Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. On the first day of training camp, the Bengals received a scare when former first-round edge Shamar Stewart was carted off with a knee injury. Today, head coach Zach Taylor said Stewart avoided a major injury and hyperextended his knee. He'll miss several weeks. Brown's second training camp practice is in progress. GM Andrew Berry spoke on this week's extensions of corner Denzel Ward and safety Grant Delpit.
Really excited to have those guys. They're what we want in the organization. They embody being Cleveland Browns, and happy to have them for the long haul.
College hoops. Per reports, tip times are set for the CareSource Invitational October 7th in Cincinnati. Ohio State and Cincy will play at 3 with Xavier and Dayton to follow after the game. Tickets on sale Friday. PGA Tour, Peter Malnati leads round one of the Rocket Classic at 9-under. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Anthony's tennis shorts were so tight, they had to pixelate his crotch. You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
Second hour of the program. Little Browns film breakdown at 1:30 with our friend Jake the Snake. All right, so we get into... We'll continue a little bit on that SEC thing. And it's funny how, like, Sankey's Big Ten peer is Petiti. And they normally kind of take a, you know, Tony Petitti is more a little bit, he's the lesser version. Maybe the water, maybe he's the off-brand vitamin water of the conference commissioners.
You got a little lemon flavor over there? What do you got?
That is a lemonade.
Okay.
That cool, refreshing drink. Yeah, it's flavored with other natural flavors, I'm sure. vitamin enhanced. Natural enhancement. So he went into the Big Ten's 11 playoff wins the past two seasons, which is more than double the next closest league. Those aren't my words. Those are Petiti's words, meaning that dude was flexing this week. Mm-hmm. He was. Mm-hmm. He hears it. And so he's responding to the SEC's argument that it's our mid-tier is better than yours. Wonderful. Congratulations.
It's like, because honestly, what are we arguing here? It's one of those arguments for fans. It's like the tribalism I see amongst the wrestling community. Like, oh, I'm a WWE person. I'm an AEW person. There's just so much tribalism that leads to really nothing. It's fun to kind of talk about, but what do these disputes really mean?
So the SEC in my mind is trying to come to an answer that makes sense to justify why they haven't won at all in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. What do you want? You want us to win 70-0 against Florida to keep you happy?
Some of it's coaching. Some of it's coaches that aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
Some of it's turnover. Some of it's NIL, right? Because it's very hard sometimes when you get a new coach to instantly snap your finger and have it continue. And there's that narrative, certainly at Bama and Georgia trying to stay on top every single year. And so, and listen, I'm not here to back Ohio State every day. They're not, they've gotten their title. They're not racking them up.
It's a 10-year gap between titles.
So being competitive is good. It's very good. You can praise Ohio State for not having down years. I've covered 3-4 loss seasons with Ohio State. And as long as they, quote, won the big one, it was all okay. But now, the good news about this era is that you can lose two and get in and still be the last team standing, which Ohio State has proven. And so it's kind of cool. I don't know whether the balance for coaches now is, the old school coaches is, do I want to put up with NIL and lose recruits to money or have to recruit a kid for money? I know Ohio State says they don't, but they have to play the game. They don't like they're very balanced in, are they good for the brotherhood? Are they good for this? Like, if the first question you've heard Ryan Day say, the first thing is, where's the money or how much money? Then you're not for us. But you know, you have, eventually you're going to get to that conversation. But the coaches of this era are embracing NIL because A, they have to, that's their profession. And B, they know that it's not like Tress and guys of the past that couldn't lose a game if they wanted to win a title.
Yeah.
Now you can. Mm-hmm. The beauty of this era is you can manage your season to some degree with playing, moving everything towards the playoff. It doesn't mean you don't want to win. You do. But you have a couple get-out-of-jail-free cards, and we've talked about this too, the rest versus rust. And do you want to be a number one seed with a bye waiting while another team catches fire and gets confidence and gets rolling? And so there's a balance here, man, and I'm all for, it's made it fun. It's not ideal, but it hasn't completely watered down the regular season. But my original point is, I think the SEC is trying to justify why they haven't won a title. I don't know if TLC can spin this if you haven't prepped it yet, but it's okay. You can let me know which one. Laura Rutledge was on McAfee's show, and she's a Florida Gator, and that's fine. She can rep the SEC and rep Florida. That's her alma mater. Zero problems with that. But when you get on and you start talking about it, I think you have to shelve that a little bit and deal with it from an objective point of view. And so I think she's kind of carrying a little bit of my feeling of what the SEC is trying to do here, which is, you know, we just aren't at our best when we get in because we're just physically been manhandled. Like, it's the opposite of what every coach would tell you, which is being battle tested and knowing your weaknesses. Now, I'm all for it. If you have injuries, that's different. Like, if you're physically beaten up and you have injuries to key players, that's 100% justification.
But they don't have more injuries in the SEC because it's a tougher brand of football. I'm not buying that.
No, no, they're saying now that they're playing nine. Well, what they're doing is they're connecting dots. We have better teams top to bottom, and we play nine now. And since those two things happen, that equals this.
I think one of the reasons why the SEC maybe has not advanced as far in the playoff as some SEC fans would like to see is because the competition within the league is so difficult that nine games of craziness, week in and week out, a little different than other parts, other conferences. I'm not dissing on the Big Ten.
Yeah, they cannibalize each other.
Right. Yeah, so by the time they get to the end, there's not many left, for one. They eliminate each other, but furthermore, they're gassed. They're injured. They have issues.
They're I'm just pointing out facts
because you were pointing out facts. And then...
we're all gassed. I don't even know if you can't get gassed.
Okay, but the other thing I would like to point out is look at the NFL draft and how many players come out of the SEC.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's how we
but individual players.
Okay, that's crazy. You guys can't win like that with all the talent. I mean, now you start wondering.
I got a lot of faith in Kirby Smart as well.
That's like a selfish league.
Yeah, and
can't come together.
They're gassed and they're injured.
She's waving the flag for the SEC. She covered the SEC. We know ESPN and the SEC are in bed together. I understand the game she's trying to play. I think that's part of this as well. I work for the network. We rep this conference. Like, that's got to be part of her answer as well. But we got to stop sitting here and acting like the Missouris, Kentuckys, Auburns, Arkansas, South Carolinas are moving the needle. They're not. They're not. And we'll see if Vanderbilt is going to be able to repeat what they're going to do. There's a handful of teams in that conference I respect and know what they're going to do year in and year out. Outside of that, it's okay that the SEC has to put a fresh coat of paint on themselves and showcase that they are this dominant conference that they believe that they are.
Line up their back half versus the Big Ten's back half and send them both to an island and let them play. Yeah. Honestly. Because if that's what the argument is, that... UCLA and Purdue and Rutgers and Northwestern and Nebraska and Maryland, and like, if they're not worthy, okay, maybe they're not. Those aren't championship teams.
But you know who else isn't worthy? Auburn at 1-7 in
saying.
The conference.
Send
Mississippi
back.
State, South Carolina, all 1-7 in the conference last year. Arkansas was 0-8.
They might be better, technically, their back half. If you line them both up against the Big Ten's back half, they might win. They might.
Well, I guess we'll never know.
But
maybe. Right?
But the bottom line is, who cares?
Exactly.
Because if they think that their conference is so awesome, top to bottom, and that's the reason, like it just seems weak. It seems insecure. Instead of lean into what it is, Big Ten's been the last team standing the last few years. That's marching orders to our conference. And the SEC, unlike the Big Ten, has always had kind of conference pride. They've sold it. I've noticed in the Big Ten, nobody, quote, roots for the Big Ten anymore. Back in the 90s during bowl season, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like I did, I rooted for other Big Ten teams again in the bowl games.
I'm not that guy. I know where I'm at.
But I mean, it was different. It just felt different back then. I don't know why. We lost a step for sure on that. But
I'm not a conference pride guy. Doesn't do anything for me.
I wonder if
it's about what are we doing?
Let me ask you this, and maybe you wouldn't know, and maybe this is personal bias.
Yeah.
Since I was in the conference, I wonder if that was it. I wonder. I don't know. I wonder if someone personally went to
one of the schools, a little bit.
But yeah.
I'm always a little perplexed when it comes to the people that, Iowa won their bowl game versus Kentucky. This is great for us.
I don't know. But I don't know what. So that's my point. Is they're arguing, She's arguing that their logic is that they're not at their best when you have to be because of the gauntlet that they went through. Or they're going to go through.
Okay. It's an excuse, like you said.
It
they're
has
trying to
gauntlet.
They're trying to find any reason to explain to us why we haven't won a national championship in 3 years. We just got to be better.
I'll
How
make
about
this
that?
Guarantee.
Yeah.
If Ohio State doesn't win at all this year, I 99.9% Ryan Day and his staff will not be touting it was because of the schedule.
1,000% they're not doing that.
We played too tough of a schedule, and when we got to the playoff, we were gassed and injured.
Boo-hoo. Boo-hoo.
Honestly, if that ever comes out, it might be time to just pull ripcord.
What if they lose to Texas and miss the playoff by one spot? What would the schedule talk be then?
Well, Sark did it. Sark said it, right?
If they
didn't play Ohio State, they would have been in. He played that card.
I don't think Day's playing that card.
I don't think he's going to play that card. He's got a title. I think he knows what this is, and if they don't take care of their own business, because if you look at Ohio State's schedule, the only way they probably wouldn't make it is if they lost one of the big home games, Oregon or Michigan. Like, that would be one, those you probably can't lose unless you beat Texas, you beat Indiana, you beat USC, you're fine, but... Those are all three road games. Are they going to go 3-0 in their roadies?
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough. Man.
But Indiana's following up a natty with a new team and a new quarterback.
What school won a natty last year? Can you remind me?
That'd be the Indiana University.
Insane.
The Hurry and Hoosiers.
Insane, man.
Or as one of their players who one day wrote a thank you letter for leaving said, I'd like to thank the University of Indiana.
We don't just beat top 25 teams, we beat the shit out of them.
If a guy ever leaves Ohio State and says, I just had to forego, I had to leave, and I would like to thank the University of Ohio State for giving me everything, every tool I need to succeed, then that would be the reason, that would be the sign of apocalypse for the NIL. Because these kids are bouncing from school to school to school, and they don't really know even the name, how it's...
You think Cignetti's going to be in that bag when game day's at Indiana for Ohio State and Indiana?
Don't Listen, we don't just beat top like 25 said, teams. We beat the shit out of them.
I said,
come on, man.
They climbed Mount Everest. If he tumbles down, if there's an avalanche, he delivered the Holy Grail. Like, he delivered something that nobody ever thought is imaginable.
AR, we beat the blank.
He's unbelievable.
This dude, man.
That's why I said when you were out last week, we were talking about who we'd like to see on a podcast together. Like, dead or alive.
Yeah.
And I wanted Bob Knight and Kurt Cignetti to just think that would be awesome.
I love that topic, by the way. I'm trying to think of who I would want to collab with or want to hear collab
Tress,
on a pod.
Tress had Thad Matta on his deal.
Okay.
So we were thinking, Scotty and I were thinking about a couple. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Think about that. We'll come back. And the Heisman chance, Maddie. It's quarterback or receiver. Who's got the edge? Rothman.
Morning Juice is now live on YouTube. Join Bobby Carpenter and Jeff Bedoff weekday mornings from 6 to 8.
Just search 971 The Fan to catch the live experience or watch on demand.
The Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the rest of the day, we'll see some of those fair weather clouds trying to pop up, but we'll call it mostly sunny for the afternoon. Highs reach the lower 80s. Real nice day out there. Mostly clear skies tonight, 63 for a low. For your Friday, partly sunny skies as some high clouds gradually stream in from the west. We'll see highs right around 86. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
We are your radio home for the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. We may have a bit of a football problem.
Oh, yeah.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hey, this is Michael Behrens, Big Red, otherwise known as the Czar of the Parking Lot, and you're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1 The Fan.
So Julian and Jeremiah both in Chicago. I didn't really hear any Heisman talk, a little bit, I guess, but they didn't ask them together. Like, I'll get your guys' feeling on that. If you're sitting in front of Julian Sain and Jeremiah Smith, by the way, they did interviews together. I think ESPN, they were on SportsCenter together.
A couple homies kicking it.
And maybe they were asked this, I don't know. But I think it would have been interesting to ask them, listen, they're team guys. They got team goals. They want to win a natty. And they want to go all the way, but they are attached. Their successes will be attached to each other. And so the Heisman stuff, I think the funny thing to ask would be, do you feel like you guys steal votes from each other?
That's where my mind always goes when it comes to these two. Can one separate themselves from the other enough? Is there going to be a large enough gap? And I don't think that's the case. Before we elaborate a little bit more, I know TLC's got some Jeremiah Smith sound on, and he was asked about the Heisman, and here are his thoughts.
For sure, definitely. That's something I'm chasing. But like I said, teams first, and whatever comes after that comes after that.
It reminds me a little bit of when it comes to splitting votes a couple of years ago when Aaron Judge and Juan Soto were on the same team with the Yankees, right? And they're having these amazing seasons, and it was like, it's going to be tough, right, for these guys to pull that off just because they're so great. It feels more Biletnikoff for me, for Jeremiah, like grabbing one of those, and especially when we're talking about a season to where there's supposed to be some really, really good quarterback play going on. So when you look at Arch Manning and Dante Moore and CJ Carr and his own guy, Julian Sayin, not that he couldn't still get to New York, but it seems like it's an uphill climb for Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. He's capable of it. There's no doubt. But I just think that there's some other guys around the sport right now that may be taking up those spots.
You got to play a pivotal role, which Jeremiah does, and you got to have a lot of catches and a lot of touchdowns. And the problem is that the catches actually may go further than the touchdowns, and that's a number that's not technically attributed to the quarterback as much, like a slant or an out, like the amount of catches you can rack up. But every time you score a touchdown, the quarterback's getting credit for it as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's why in history there have been probably, five or less receivers that have ever won the Heisman. It's one of those that the quarterback has such an advantage because you're not the only guy he's throwing to, most likely. And so it's a testament to the incredible talent that they both have, that they both be considered for it. You go back to Devontae Smith's Heisman of 2020, and he had 117 catches.
Yeah, the numbers were insane.
And so
you have the touchdowns in
23.
Yeah.
That's undisputed stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have to go back and see speaking of splitting votes, maybe you could look this up. Najee Harris was on that team, right?
That sounds about right.
So I'm wondering what kind of season, if he stole votes.
What year was that again?
2020, I would think.
He would have finished fifth in the Heisman voting.
So he made it pretty easy for Devontae to win it then.
Devontae won it. Trevor Lawrence second. Mac Jones third. Kyle Trask four. Najee Harris five off the top of my head.
Five.
The 2020 line for Najee Harris, 251 carries, 1,466 yards, and 26 touchdowns. Good God, that offense was nasty.
Yeah. Goodness. And
were the quarterback? What was Mac's numbers? Let me go find that for you. I like that you brought up Mac Jones because I think that's another thing that could hurt Jeremiah just a touch is we all know the football world has seen that he's not attached to a Mac Jones. He's attached to a guy that was a Heisman finalist last
year. Correct.
And so I think that's another tough thing for him too.
The other tough thing for him would be if Julian adds rushing.
Yeah.
To his arsenal this year at all,
yeah.
And get some rushing touchdowns, that would add to it.
Mac Jones in 2020, 77.4% completion percentage, 4,500 yards on the dot, 41 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, one rushing touchdown that year.
Do you guys have ESPN on in your studio?
Yeah.
Are you seeing Pete Thamel on McAfee?
Just looking down.
He's zooming in to McAfee's show with like his phone in his lap, and he's just looking straight down at it.
TLC, that's how all the TV people look at us here. Yep. All the radio people. That's
looking
how,
down
that's
upon
how
us.
AR used to look at us. He's looking down on us.
I'm looking up his nostrils. Yeah, that's what I know.
I know. Like I've never seen somebody FaceTime like that. I've never seen somebody Zoom like that.
Yeah, it's a tough
his thing. Phone is in his lap, and he's looking straight down.
That would be so frowned upon years ago on making something look good.
He also looks like Steve Carell to me.
And it doesn't matter anymore. I think AJ's got a fake bookshelf behind him for years.
Yeah.
Like a graphic. Like they don't seem
I've
to.
I've never noticed that.
And now you're going to see that the filter is yellow. Because I mentioned that to AR. Like now looking at AJ, it's just his, like the, it's yellow. Like the screen, the backdrop, like everything. I don't know.
It balances out McAfee's skin tone being pink.
Yeah, I feel like it's the graphic or the backdrop behind him.
Yeah.
Computer generated. That has a yellow tinge to it. And
this is the greatest show in the history of television.
Right, exactly. And they don't care. They don't care. Honestly, nobody cares anymore. Like back in the day, we used to, I mean, before Skype was invented, like you would rent sat trucks for hundreds and thousands of dollars to beam you a signal from somewhere. And then it was like the technology came way before Zoom with Skype. And you'd have somebody across the world and it would, you know, look bad and everything, but you'd understand where you were. Now it's like,
I think AR
guys are in their car and their phones doing hits on network TV.
I think it was the pandemic. I think that's been the acceptance, was when we were all at home and these shows were still happening and these guys are popping up on their couch and this guy's popping up in his office at home in his basement, whatever. I think everybody kind of realized, oh, we can still get this done at a pretty decent level. It may not be 4K and an amazing camera, but the job's still getting done at a good enough level. And so I think the standard of what media looks and sounds like has changed because of the pandemic.
So my guess is he has his phone set up on a little holder tripod on a table or something, and he's just looking down at it. Because you don't want to just hold it.
The angle that he's looking at, it's almost like we're all down in a hole in the ground, and he's like looking down to try to help.
Timmy
us.
Fell down the well.
Yeah. It's like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He's just looking down at us.
Good movie, by the way. Did they make another one of those? I think they did. AR, you brought up Zoom, and my mind went to, what is Zoom worth now?
Sorry, I was just going with the sequel, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
When did that come out?
I think they called it Shrinkage, too.
This whole segment's a sequence.
I need to know.
I messed up my own joke, whatever I was going to say.
How much is...
What do you mean, how much it's worth?
Well, I'm curious now.
Is there a stock?
What the pandemic did for Zoom, it had to take them through the roof, I would think.
I think it was kind of like Netflix at the time, where...
Oh, you think they were on that level?
Zoom? No, what I mean is it took that big spike up, and now it's probably...
Cooled off a bit.
Well, I don't know where that is, but you can let us know. Talking about the past 5 years?
Mm-hmm. No, I
bet that's taken quite a tumble.
Sorry for the whiplash on topics in this segment.
Yeah, I was going to say, we were talking Heisman, and I'm looking up Thamel's nose.
It's college football related. I've got Eric, forgive me, Juan here. Mm-hmm. He is the creator of Zoom, and it looks like he is worth about $5.3 billion.
Retire and go have fun in life.
He's got ownership stakes and is the founder and CEO of Zoom Video Communications.
Do a radio show 3 times a week. Only in football season.
$5.3
billion. Yeah, right.
I'm not hitting that in the lottery, though. I'm not hitting $5 billion.
Yeah, but enough to not have to work.
You're not going to be able to get rid of me. I'm here.
How would one's lifestyle change if they were a $1 billionaire or a $5 billionaire? Their life would be exactly the same.
Exactly.
I don't know about that.
Well, that $4 extra billion get you that the first billion couldn't.
What else? Plenty of things. Teams. I can own teams.
But the whole point that we're talking about is we don't want to work.
Well, how much are you working? You own a team.
I guess.
Yeah. Unless you want to be Jerry Jones.
Just the GM.
Have your own show. Talk. That can't be work.
Threaten to fire the hosts.
So good. All right, we're going to come back in 2 minutes with some Browns breakdown with our friend Jake Burns, Rothman and Ice.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
There's nothing like ripping off your pants and enjoying some lobster bisque. This is Rothman and Ice.
I love talking Browns football with our friend Jake Burns, Browns Films Breakdown. What's happening, my man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming back. All right. So, listen, I think there's some sticker shock to the Denzel Ward situation, right? Highest paid DB again. But you got to play. You got to have competitors. You got to have some leaders in that locker room. You can't strip Munkin of everything. You can't just load up on just picks. You need live human beings to play this game. So give me your take. Did you like the signing, or were you questioning it?
Yeah, I think it comes down to a couple things. I think the Browns are really trying to, if the 26th draft class pans out immediately as well as 25, they see a lot of things they want to see from them. Obviously, a lot of praise post-draft for the quality of player they took. They get the 25 group with this group. They think they're close to competing, which might make a lot of listeners roll their eyes and laugh a little bit. But I genuinely think that they think that with the 25 and 26 classes, which interestingly enough, ESPN ranks teams under 25 talent, so those are players under the age of 25. The Browns were 29th going into the 25 season. They have them all the way up at 4th now, which is an indication that the young talent they've brought in, both in the last 2 years, some additions they've found in the trade market, et cetera, have obviously a profound impact on the youth of this roster, but the quality of this roster. So when you think about it that way, and then you have, you have a player in Denzel who fits really what the Browns do very well. I think if you checked what Denzel's kind of best at throughout his career, he's very much a very good walk-up press man corner who can run that press bail technique and cover one a very effective way. Not quite as effective in zone variation, still a very good football player, but more adept at that zone and quite valuable to the Browns and a few select other teams around the league who play a style of corner that he plays well. So, I think a lot of folks would be like, well, you traded Myles Garrett. Why aren't you trading Denzel Ward? Why aren't you trading Grant Delpit, another player that they just extended? Well, those guys fit in the particular way the Browns operate very well, and they still have 3 to 4 good years to provide. And whereas, like, the trade market that I think people think is robust, you could get, like, a first or second round, perhaps. That is not, I think, the way the league perceives, in particular to your question, Denzel Ward, who I think, again, is a more valuable player to the Browns, a little bit of like some of that age 30, some of that concussion history that he's had. So, like, taking a day 3 pick for Grant Delpit and Denzel Ward, it doesn't really have a value that you can really lean into. Whereas, you know, these players in the transition phase, and especially in important positions like corner is a premium position, the Browns don't want to have another issue at corner that they don't have any player to fill there, and they have to go out and draft somebody maybe when their draft capital could get a little tied up if they have to trade up and get the quarterback that they so hope to find next year. So I think it's just like they really do view themselves as a team if they land the right quarterback, whether that's the first pick or the 5th, 6th, all the way to 10th, teams like think about the Broncos when they drop Bo Nix in, or think about Jaden Daniels, the 3rd overall pick. You don't have to have the first pick, but if you get the right talent around a young rookie quarterback, you can win games. You can be a playoff team, and I think they view themselves in that spot. And when you think about it from that perspective, that like, hey, 2027, if the two internal options, Deshaun and Shador, don't pan out to be something that they can lean into long term, like, hey, we want to draft a quarterback and go. You don't want to then have holes in your secondary when you might have to use some of your draft capital to go get that quarterback. You want to keep all your options on the table. So on top of all of that is a guy you want to have veterans. You want to have guys who have seen the good, bad, and everything in between in your franchise. And Denzel's also a Cleveland guy through and through. He doesn't want to go anywhere else. So a lot of that stuff lines up too.
So let's lock in on Deshaun and Shador just a little bit, because as you know, there's going to be so much focus on what those guys are doing every single snap at training camp and all that. And sometimes it can get a little crazy in my mind. But when look into your crystal ball for us, and who do you believe will end up starting the most games at quarterback this year?
I think the question you asked there is the most games, right? Because I think people see this like, hey, say you lean into Shador Sanders should be the guy, right? Or you lean into Deshaun should be the guy. Well, if recent memory doesn't help, I mean, you know, going all the way back, I think Baker Mayfield in the 21 season started 17 games, right? And I probably shouldn't have started those games because of the shoulder. I think in retrospect, everybody would agree with that. But like, what his recent history has told us, 22, Deshaun suspended, Jacoby Brissett. 23, Deshaun gets hurt, you play P.J. Walker. I think you do a little bit of Dorian Thompson-Robinson in there, and then Joe Flacco, right? And then, 24 has got some Jameis Winston, 25. You get where I'm going with this. So, like, you've seen they consistently cannot keep, A, a quarterback performing well enough to hold down the position, and then, B, they've had these injury things come up. So I think, like, they're going to announce a starter. I don't know who it's going to be. Deshaun Watson didn't help himself on day one. I do think genuinely it's an open quarterback competition. Deshaun didn't help himself, but we'll see who starts. I think Shador should logically start every game this year. That's my opinion. I think that it has been so long since we've seen anything reputable from Deshaun Watson. Trying to dip our toe back in that water does not feel like an endeavor that I think is going to bear fruit. So I would be playing almost a la Deshaun Kizer, I think, in 2017. You're letting a young guy go out there and give you either he plays himself into being the future because he goes out and proves it and they win games, or he's bad enough and it doesn't work out that he's losing games and then you get your quarterback in the next draft. I would be playing Shador Sanders. It does seem like they're very seriously entertaining Deshaun Watson. Again, hasn't played well since 2020. Shoulder injury, Achilles twice. Like, it's hard for me to envision that being a thing. I think he's going to play. Probably Watson's going to play. And, you know, if they move a quarterback, say Dylan Gabriel goes somewhere else, and I mean, what are the odds? I talked about this in my podcast. You probably see Taylen Green in a game at the end of the year. So it's hard to really pin that down. I guess the thing that's hard for me to say is, like, whoever wins this quarterback competition is going to play 18 games as a starter this year. That just is not, like, you'd be silly. The odds on that would be long because they just don't do that when it's not like a solidified Baker Mayfield high pick type of player. And Deshaun Watson has proven that he just can't stay healthy and he can't perform well enough to hold that position down. So that's where I lean. Like, I would prefer this year that they get every answer possible out of Shador Sanders, and then you're moving either on or you have an answer. But we'll see what they do. They got 3 weeks or so to sort all of that out.
All right, final minute here with you, Jake Burns, and I want to ask you about Clowney, Jadeveon Clowney, and whether it's kind of interesting that they'd be interested in each other, right? It just didn't feel like it ended well. Felt like a sour note when he left, but you got a new regime, you got a new coach and all that. How real is this, and how much do you feel they need him?
To the first part of your question, how real is it? I think it is real. I don't think there's a robust Jadeveon Clowney market the way maybe Clowney had 5 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago, right? I don't think that market for him is as big as it used to be. Obviously, we're well into camp, and you will see some veterans. Jamal Adams the other day signs with the Vikings. There are guys like this, and Clowney's no stranger to that mid-camp signing. But it's probably not as deep a market as he's accustomed to, and he was obviously younger and a bit more talented. But I do think, everybody within the organization, it ended very sour when he left. There were some complaints internally about how he was being treated by some of the coaches that were around on that staff, and he didn't prefer the way some of the players went about leadership, some things like that. Ironically, those players that he referenced are now gone, and the coaching staff is now gone. So I think Todd Monken knows Jadeveon well from their time together in Baltimore. And I do think there's a genuine interest from both sides. Now, if the Browns fans listening to this remember, they went out and they did sign A.J. Epenesa, a former second-round pick of the Bills, to be that fourth edge. They lost Cameron Thomas this offseason, who went to Atlanta, where Kevin Stefanski is now. He was that kind of fourth edge, that rotational player. So they have been down a guy. Now, they added some UDFAs of interest, like Logan Fano, Spencer's brother from Utah. They added Tyreek Sapp from Florida, kind of primary guys, and the guy killed in Valdor, a long, lanky edge from Vanderbilt. They've got some intriguing UDFA options, but the Epenesa thing fell apart because he failed his physical, so the Browns ended up not working that contract to finality. So they are, like, kind of poking around about this fourth edge, and Clowney would be at the forefront of, like, the most talent that is out there. But again, it's hard to say whether he would actually, the figures would work out for what they want to pay him, for what he's maybe expecting. It's tough to tell, but I do think there is a genuine interest. He wouldn't come to Berea any other way. And most of the things that were a hindrance to how he departed the last time, those staff, those coaches, other than the front office, which I don't think was intertwined in that. That was more of like an issue with the staff and some of the players on the roster. Those guys seem to be gone. So I do think the Clowney thing is serious, but that doesn't mean he won't end up going somewhere else.
Yeah. Good stuff, Jake. Always bring us the great insight, my man. We'll talk soon. Thanks for taking the time again.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Jake Burns, Browns Film Breakdown on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline.
Guess who's roaming the grounds at Browns practice today, AR? Take a wild guess. Who may be there? Made a celebrity appearance today.
The way you just said that, it sounds like somebody's daddy.
Well, I do love me some Shador Sanders. Oh. Prime's in the house.
Yeah.
Cowboy hat on and all. Roaming the sidelines. Well, watching this game.
I don't give a damn about the Browns. I do love me some Shador Sanders. Maybe. Don't believe it.
He's in the building.
You got a free lunch today. All right. We'll come back and
you know, it's interesting. There are a lot of people that had a narrative about this draft pick saying that if he doesn't start, then how could he be a true number one pick? Well, we'll discuss that next. Rothman
and BA Benefits. T-Bone and Tybus is sponsored by Capital Ford of Columbus.
A thing that's like, this will make a meal for a family. It's talking like a family of four, and I'm in the family, so I count as like three right off the bat.
Mornings on The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Their live golf team name is Ice Dogs. You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, so Fernando Mendoza is QB2 in camp to Cousin Kirk. And some people believe that this is validation for the fact that Vegas did not get a true number one overall pick in the draft. That if you think they did, you're wrong. I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think the Raiders are ready made. I don't think that just because Mendoza can't or isn't going to start week one means that they got a lesser guy. I actually think it's a good move. I think it's this isn't the first time a number one overall quarterback didn't start right away. Am I wrong?
No.
Did Eli Manning start right away? Did Jared Goff start right away?
The people that are saying that, that's crazy town, man. Because he's not going to start week one against the Miami Dolphins? That he's not worthy of the number one overall pick? I can't get down with that. We've got years to go until we are going to find out whether or not he is worthy of that pick. Nobody's denying the amount of pressure that comes along with that, but we kind of knew that when the Raiders brought in Kirk Cousins and we looked at some of the financials, that wasn't going to be a, hey, we're just paying you to sit on the bench type of situation. So he can now sit back. You mentioned the offensive line. You bring in Tyler Linderbaum, one of the most coveted free agents at any position this offseason when you go look at the contract that he got. But I'm still questioning AR, the playmakers around him too. And so in time this year, I think it is smart for him to get out there and play. They got a late bye week in week 13. And so him consuming the mental part of the game along with the physical stuff and practices, I think is good for a little bit of time.
I also think he's the personality that would embrace this. Maybe a lot of guys wouldn't. Maybe this would be a bad move with certain guys. Maybe this would set them back mentally. I think with Fernando Mendoza, it doesn't. I think Cousins knows Kubiak's offense. And I think him mentoring Fernando is really good. I think it's smart. I think they feel they have a future quarterback. Bring him along slowly. I think this is counter to what most people believe in sports today, that most big-time college football players should be able to start right away. And at quarterback, it's just a different beast. It's not like, hey, you're physically an NFL guy, so go out there and prove it. You got to have a team around you. So this was one of those that I think it's a smart move. That most of the quarterbacks in NFL history were behind other guys to start. Could two things be true, and that it's smart to have him behind Cousins, but also that maybe last year's quarterback draft wasn't ready made? Like, yes, he was the overall number one, but all overall number ones aren't created equal.
Right.
Just because you're overall number one doesn't make you as good as a former overall number one. There's different levels of this. So they took a chance at number one that he was the best quarterback in the draft. I don't know any other way to look at it. Tom Brady wasn't the guy right away. Like you can go to a lot of examples.
Yeah, and it's perfectly fine. There's no correct answer in this. You can have the guy that comes in and is ready to play. And that can work out well for your franchise, or it can go the other way. Look at Pat Mahomes. Mahomes is an all-timer. He didn't play out of the gate. Of course. Alex Smith held it down for a little bit. I just don't like the thought of the rookie quarterback that we draft early on, especially that high, doesn't need to play at all in year one. I'm not a big fan of that. I've kind of moved off that it needs to be early on in the season. No, pick a window of time in the middle, back half of the year, as he can, hey, know what it takes to show up on game day and go through your, like, everything that it takes to be a franchise quarterback. There's more to it than, hey, getting the play to my guys, calling snap, and then going about. There's so much more that comes into this, especially at this level. You are the face of a franchise. You're getting pulled in so many different directions. And I completely agree with you about if he could learn from anybody, this is one of the guys you would want him to learn from. Kirk Cousins, his entire career has been about nothing but, hey, I'm just here to ball. You know, Kirk Cousins doesn't care about anything else. And I think Fernando
makes money.
He loves, which all of us do. Which all of
when you
us
said he
do.
Didn't care about anything else. He does care about cash.
And good for him, because the league has handed him guaranteed contract after guaranteed contract.
He got
contract.
Another 20 mil.
I think he's in good hands. That being Fernando Mendoza. The Raiders are in a division to where the three teams around them have their guy. They got to join this party sooner rather than later, because Bo Nix, Mahomes, and Herbert, those guys aren't going anywhere anytime soon. So they have to make sure that when he's out there on the field, he's ready to go.
This is so not a shock. When did Cousins get to Vegas? 3 weeks before the draft, right? This wasn't a, am I right about it? I thought
I can't remember the timing.
I think they got him well before they drafted Mendoza.
And that's, hey, follow their actions. They're telling you right there what they're going to do. You're not, because Kirk Cousins isn't one of those guys where you hear his name as a backup and you know for sure he isn't going to play. He's just going to be there as the backup. You hear a name like Kirk Cousins in the same way you hear Tua getting signed to Atlanta. It's like, oh, okay, those guys are brought in to be the starter. And that's what is going to happen out there in Vegas.
Think that we are so quick to look at teams and believe that they have to just be instant success. There's no development anymore. There's no, like, bringing guys along. Why can't Mendoza learn from a veteran guy before he gets going?
It's the fancy new toy everybody wants to see. You don't want to get the Christmas gift and be told you got to wait until Easter to play with it. You know what I mean? I think that's probably some mentality. People want to see what he's got.
The chocolate bunny.
And that's kind of overrated.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Didn't move me as a
milk
kid.
Chocolate bunny. The
same thing with the little, what are the
white chocolate,
little birdie things they are.
Yeah.
Little fluffy marshmallow
Peeps.
Yeah, that. Didn't love them as
Peeps
a kid.
They're no, like, that's not good. What, I was out on
that's
those.
Like what are those?
Smarties,
like,
circus peanuts or whatever. Like that's I don't
smart. You know where I'm at on Smarties. Worst candy.
Is that a sweet tart? Is that like a sweet tart?
It's just like chocolate. Yeah, something like that. You know, got them as a kid a lot.
Love them.
Mm-hmm. You love them. You love Smarties.
I'm trying to think of
interesting.
What the worst candy would be.
Oh, that's number one for me. Smarties.
I definitely have an answer to this. I just can't come up with it.
Okay.
I'm going to need to read some lists and then steal.
Charleston Chews? AR, you grew up
No, with don't like those. I thought you were about to. You grew up doing the Charleston, didn't you? No, I hated all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything that was like, I don't know, like taffy or any kind of. Yeah, I didn't. No.
Okay. Kind of
good old fashioned chocolate candy bars.
Milk does not affect. I know almond milk, joys again, are pretty polarizing.
Again, the stuff that gets stuck in your teeth is probably not getting a vote.
So you're anti Butterfinger then?
A buttery finger?
Because that's, no, the, I like that's kinda, the
you
candy
mean the shards I, of the whatever that is that gets caught in your teeth?
That's the candy. See, I thought about, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm, was Butterfinger. Yeah. Because
I
love the taste of
I don't remember the buttery finger getting caught in the teeth.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain little shards of that that break off, but I didn't, it's not like I ever felt like that was a problem.
Well, it was for my chompers. I think we should get veneers. Let's get veneers, all three of us.
All three of us?
Yeah, let's just get veneers. AR will pay for them. TLC.
What do you mean? Get, like, so we can all have, like, bright smiles?
Nice teeth, yeah.
Man, just brush them real good.
I got to get the Invisalign.
Oh, you
perfect.
Do?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got to, so in order to get, I wanted to get my teeth whitened. That was the first step.
Oh, my. I wanted to get my teeth whitened.
I wanted to get them whitened. But before that, I wanted to get a gum graft because I actually need that.
Okay.
And then I didn't know that before that, I needed to get my jaw realigned. And so I'm like, this is a whole gigantic thing.
You know what's good for that? Circus peanuts.
Yeah.
It strengthens your jaw. You got to chew real hard.
I had braces when I was 14. Stuck.
Prior to you dating someone that's on TV, did you think about getting your teeth whitened before?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I just didn't know, you know?
Yeah.
She was pushing you to tighten things up a little bit.
No.
Okay.
Now you got me looking at lists.
Tell us coming back from break what you see and what you don't like. Because I think I'm anti-Smarty. Let us know in the chat.
Smarty's just kind of a nothing. It's just kind of like a poor man's sweet tart, right?
Very poor.
Yeah. I like both.
The destitute man's candy. All right, we're going to come back top of the hour. Guess who has spoken?
Who's that?
The baker.
Okay.
And now we'll find out whether we really can take him at his word that he's betting on himself. Rothman sent you.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. The Blue Jackets have announced the hiring of Don Granato as assistant coach and Cody Ward as a video coach. Granato spent 4 years as Sabres head coach and returns to Columbus after playing and coaching the Chill in the 90s. NFL CBS analyst Tony Romo had an open container of alcohol in his car when stopped by Milwaukee police last week and later arrested on suspicion of a DUI. His court date set for September 21st. Bengals head Shamar Stewart will miss several weeks with a hyperextended knee after being carted off Wednesday. Baseball, Columbus leads Toledo 8-4 after 7. Bo Naylor, George Valera, and Ralphie Velasquez have slugged homers for the Clippers. Cleveland and Cincinnati are both off. Guards a game and a half behind the White Sox for first in the AL Central. Reds 6 games back of a wild card spot. PGA Tour, Peter Malnati shot 9-under-61 to lead round one of the last Rocket Classic. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan.
Shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at OrthopedicOne.com.
All right, final hour of the program, Gold Jacket Thursday. John Riggins, the Diesel, 2:30. Washington. All right, maybe I can get a Washington out of him. So, we talked about Baker Mayfield a lot yesterday. I'm all for him betting on himself. It's great. I have no idea what he's asking for. I really don't. My guess is it's double nickel or higher.
I got a bit of an update for you on that. I'm glad you mentioned that because Jeremy Fowler did a one-on-one with Baker today. So what you're going to hear is the media scrum with Baker and Tampa media members down there. But Baker Mayfield told Jeremy Fowler that the Bucks offered him a 2-year deal, which was, quote, probably the most disappointing part.
It was only 2 years?
Only a two-year deal, yes. And he said he wanted a long-term deal. He added the Bucks were, quote, pretty far from $50-plus million a year per club. So they didn't offer him anything in the $50 million range.
I told you they weren't.
So that's what he wanted, and that's from Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I was at yesterday. I said I think he wants something with a five, and they're not offering him that.
Oh, I thought it would be mid-fives. I think if they got to 50, he'd take it.
So
if it had a certain amount of years and guaranteed money attached to it.
So he feels probably disrespected two different ways. Not only are you guys shortchanging me on the per year dollar figure, but you're shortchanging me on years. I can only get two. I'm 31 years old. What's the problem?
They don't trust him.
Let's hear from Baker Mayfield and a little bit of the back and forth.
Obviously, I've told you guys I've been pretty upfront and honest about my feelings about Tampa, it being home for... Now our family, we're raising kids here. We love it here. I wanted the deal done and set the deadline and told them it was going to be all ball after that. And I did mean that. And I don't know if they thought I was just going to take some of the offers that they gave. But I'm at the point of my career and understanding what I've brought to this franchise. One, I'm very, very thankful for the chance they gave me. Do not get me wrong on that. But I've also I really know what I've brought to this franchise, leadership-wise, and even play-wise. It's been some of the best years of my career, and I think it's only going to trend upwards, just being comfortable and feeling that. So disappointing in that regard to not have, to feel disrespected a little bit. And that's really the disappointing part, to feel undervalued after thinking you've earned it. This is not a poor me thing. There's a lot of other people that have it way worse off, but I can sit here and look at other quarterbacks and peers and evaluate myself based on that and put myself in certain categories that I deserve to be compensated for that. And I think I'm a franchise quarterback. I've been told I'm a franchise quarterback. It's been said publicly from ownership down here. And so to not have a deal done is very disappointing. But I said the deadline was a deadline. And I addressed the team to let them know I meant that.
Good for him. Good. Stick to it. I'm not telling him he's worth it. But that's subjective now in the NFL. Do I think he's a better quarterback than Brock Purdy? I don't know. Probably comparable. He's not better than Lamar. Is he better than Tua? Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd rather have Baker. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so you're getting into a situation where he's not Joe Burrow. He's not Josh Allen. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's maybe doesn't even have as good of a future as Jordan Love, but timing's everything. And so I could tell you that we could put comparable quarterbacks, we could put him next to comparable quarterbacks who make more money than he does. We could absolutely play that game. And he would be right to feel comparing himself to the other quarterbacks who are making more money than him. It probably doesn't feel too good. But he has the opportunity now to bet on himself. And whatever happens, if he stays healthy and has a good season, he's going to make more money than he's making now. He just may have to wait a year. And you and I have kind of gone back and forth on the tag, and it's a dangerous game to play for them because they're going to have to ante up regardless. So my feeling is if they don't get a deal done with him, they don't want to tag him.
He even mentioned as much because TLC was only able to cut up so much because it was such a long back and forth. Okay. We wanted to bring you stuff there, but in that press conference, he also said, quote, the franchise tag really isn't in play because it would, quote, there'd be a lot of dead money involved. So he and his agent are sitting back right now and be like, they can tag me if they want. Sure, I'll take the financial upgrade, but he doesn't believe they're going to play that game.
I don't either.
And also in the soundbite that TLC played for us, you notice he kind of used their own words against them, or at least tried to. Because he said in there, I've been told from the front office down that I am a franchise quarterback. And they've said these things publicly, and I'm sure they've expressed those things privately to him as well. And so he is trying to get the court of public opinion on his side by saying some little sneaky shade right there in there as well. I heard ownership. I heard a little shade in there, which is everything that you're going to get from Baker Mayfield. He's taking a stance. He's dug in, and now he's saying this is done. And so I kind of respect that because he wants it to all be about football.
Not all. I mean, there are a lot of quarterbacks that you would consider. I don't know what you consider a franchise quarterback.
A franchise quarterback to me is a guy that you know is going to be under center every week. And obviously if he's healthy, but the production every week is going to be consistent. That to me is a franchise quarterback. Every guy's going to have different ceilings. But do you trust as a fan that you know what you're getting from your quarterback? That's good stuff consistently. Yeah. That to me is a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I've never really thought about what my definition of it is. I guess my quick definition would be he's my starter for 10 years. It's a franchise quarterback. I don't have to look for anybody else. And I won't have to look for anybody else for 10 years. Like he's a franchise quarterback. Outside of injury, he's our guy.
Yep.
That to me, I don't know how many guys really have that attached to them. Mahomes does. Allen does. Burrow does.
Lamar does.
Like, as far as franchise quarterback, there are guys that I think Dallas thinks Dak's a franchise quarterback. They paid him like one.
So if you were running the show in Tampa right now, your mindset would be because you don't see a 10-year window happening with Baker that you wouldn't want to do the deal because he's 31?
No,
or would it be more?
I don't think I need to get caught up in the 10 years with him specifically. I think that I was just trying to get my ballpark.
You're saying like the guy that's coming out of college.
To look to the draft. I don't have outside of injury. We're not drafting a quarterback for 8 to 10 years.
Makes sense.
Like that's my version of a franchise quarterback. But he's a little different. That he's into his 30s. Not the guys can't play. He's been injured before. The franchise tag is going to rise to roughly $50 million next year, and if they're not anywhere close, that tells me exactly what I thought before, that they feel he's somewhere, they're willing to give him a pretty big raise, but they're not sure they can invest in him for 3 to 5 years, knowing his injury history.
I think that's a mistake on their end. I really do think that's a mistake on their end. They're going to win enough games this year. They're not going to be able to draft one of these quarterbacks coming out. And then you're just going down the road of unknown after that at the most important position. Yeah, he's played injured. Mm-hmm. But Baker Mayfield's played in 17 games, three straight years for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's there. He's available. You've made it to the postseason. He was injured last year. He's at an age, to me, to where a four-year deal, there's nothing to be scared of. In my
just
opinion.
His past injuries, that's all.
But I guess you can say that about every guy when you want to sign a contract, right? Like
Cincinnati wasn't afraid of Burrow. Yeah. Like I understand. It's the pivotal position. Comparing his stats to relative other quarterbacks, he's probably a $50 million guy.
They are.
That's why I'm wondering. That's why I think he would take 50. I think he hinted to Fowler. They're not paying him.
Anything with a five. In the press conference, I was listening to some of it earlier as well. He brought up the history of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I'm not the only franchise player that's had to deal with this. They got another guy currently right now, Vita Vea, who's dealing with this, and he started to list off all the other guys in the past that had to have all these holdups with this ownership group. And so the reputation, it sounds like, around, I don't know, the league or maybe the Tampa area or whatever, is that ownership doesn't do very well in these situations as far as taking care of their guys when they should. So he's calling them out. That's why I said this is the guy I don't know you want to play this game with.
I was looking at like the quarterback list, and I'm trying to imagine of all the 50-plus million-dollar guys, can you win a Super Bowl with every one of them? And I think the jury's out on Herbert. Purdy's close. You'd have to have a pretty damn good team around him, which they have. Jordan Love, can you win a Super Bowl with him? A lot would have to go right. Trevor Lawrence?
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
He's leveling up now. We'll see. There's some more pressure. And then everybody, and then Dak.
Yeah.
If you have the right, all these guys.
My eyes just watched Sam Darnold win a Super Bowl. All the guys you listed, I would rather have over Sam Darnold as my starting quarterback. So, yeah, I think all those guys in the right situation. Yeah, because you can be the best in the world like Pat Mahomes is. And we watched him twice lose Super Bowls because the supporting cast around him wasn't where it needed to be.
You know, we know what Baker thinks. What we really need to find out is what their management thinks, what Light thinks, that's really what you need.
They're going to have to. I'm sure they have some media availability if they haven't already. And so hopefully they're getting peppered with this because this is a head scratcher for me.
All right, we'll come back. Myles Garrett on his potential super friend. That's next. Rothman.
Buckeye Replay this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
Scott McMullen leads the Buckeyes past Penn State in a 2003 classic.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the rest of the day, we'll see some of those fair weather clouds trying to pop up, but we'll call it mostly sunny for the afternoon. Highs reach the lower 80s. Real nice day out there. Mostly clear skies tonight, 63 for a low. For your Friday, partly sunny skies as some high clouds gradually stream in from the west. We'll see highs right around 86. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
The Big Nine was a sad, incomplete place. Enter Ohio State. The rest is history. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. Rothman and Ice present Pre-Snap Reads.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
You know, when we were talking about Aaron Donald coming back to play for the Rams, I kept bringing up, well, you know, they have to find a way to make it work. And every time I said that, it was like, oh, what do you mean? It's Aaron Donald. Welcome him back with open arms. You'll cut somebody else. You'll do anything, whatever it takes.
Which I think they would. I think they would do that.
He doesn't automatically become a free agent that can't sign with any team that he wants for any price he wants. So if he officially unretires, so I want to make that very clear. The Rams hold his rights, and he's still under contract. But they would owe him like $31 million that was attached to that final year when he retired. So I don't know. There's a little bit of fantasy and a little bit of reality with this. The Rams have roughly, let's say, 15 to $19 million in cap space, depending on how you want to cook the books. even with the previous cap charge from his contract already absorbed, you're writing a $31 million check to a 35-year-old guy who hasn't played in 2.5 years.
Done. Bring him in. We need 99 back. Like, I don't think any of that's going to stop Sean McVay and Les Snead from figuring it out. I think this is done. I think this has been done for weeks.
Committing more than $30 million in cash
for a one-off with this team? Why not? What's it going to hurt him this year, honestly?
I guess you'd have to ask the other guys that are needing new contracts. Brian Young, Kobe Turner, Puka. Like, you'd have to ask those guys.
And guess what?
How do you feel about it?
Doesn't matter how they feel.
You think they want to win more than anything?
The best player in franchise history is back, arguably.
Guys, your contract can wait.
It can. Yes. We got Miles Garrett and Aaron Donald. I'm sorry.
How do you know? I saw some video the other day. Who is he belting around in pads? Some running back. Somebody was coming through. They had pads, and Aaron Donald like knocked him on his ass. What?
Oh, I didn't see that.
I don't know, maybe I'm just dreaming. But I don't know how you truly know. He's not an every game guy, is he?
I think it'll be a ramp up throughout the season. Like a
$31 million ramp up.
Early on, the snap count won't be that high, but by game 5, 6, 7 and beyond, I think he's going to be full tilt with Miles Garrett. He absolutely looks the part. Now, that's just looking the part, but it's not like we're watching a guy that looks a little sluggish, the body doesn't look right, any of that. Like, no, I think it'll take him a few weeks to knock the rust off, and I think he's going back to old Aaron Donald form. And if he's not, honestly, if he's, let's call it 70% of what he was, that's still an absolute dude. Because he's a Hall of Fame talent. Mm-hmm. So I would take 70% of Aaron Donald with Miles Garrett and the rest of this team all day and tomorrow.
If you're Aaron Donald.
Yep.
So you play Aaron Donald here.
Okay.
And I want you back.
You're Les Snead?
Yes, I do. I want you back.
Okay. How bad do you want me?
It's not how you start a conversation.
You said it. I'm just asking. You said I want you back. How bad do you want me, Les?
I want to milk the last ounce of great football you have in you. And you want to win a Super Bowl. Let's do that together.
Okay.
Let's renegotiate the contract.
I'm not here to renegotiate. You signed me to a deal a couple years ago. That's what I'm playing for.
You want to lace up the cleats. You want to hit somebody. You want to line up next to Miles Garrett, Wonder Twin Powers, activate.
Yeah.
Let's do that together.
We already got the contract.
We got to fit you in.
Les, okay, you don't want to sign me to this deal, Les.
You want to say I'm back.
I want you to have fun walking down to the locker room and explaining to the guys that I'm the reason why Aaron Donald didn't come back.
Oh, I'll explain it to the guys that need new contracts. And guess what they'll say? They'll throw a party for me.
What about all the superstars that are going to come? Puka and Stafford and Garrett, you got to answer
Miles
to them.
Garrett, I don't need another running mate.
I think he seems pretty excited about it.
Let's hear from it.
If he's here, I'm going to be excited to be his teammate, his partner in crime. And I think we can do great things. I think there's a lot we can learn from each other, I'd love to pick his brain on, you know, the kind of things he does to attack his matchups, and I think the same could be said vice versa.
AR, if I'm Miles Garrett, I 1,000% want Aaron Donald to come into this room.
How about as a consultant? He said he wanted to pick his brain.
Defensive analyst,
yeah.
Aaron Donald.
That's fine.
Because if I'm Miles Garrett,
$5 million.
Here's what I'm thinking about. The amount of one-on-ones that I will get with Aaron Donald, it's probably going to be more than he's ever received in his life for either one of those guys. And that's why I think they're probably thinking, man, us together, along with the other guys that you mentioned, those young defensive linemen are good players as well. But that's why I want 99, because that defensive pressure that he creates right there in the middle of an offensive line, that being Aaron Donald, if you're a pass rusher, you got to love it. I think it's going to be terrifying, those two together. I honestly do.
It's a perfect situation for Donald, and that he got to leave the game, refresh, find his passion, find his energy, and not have to train to play 17-plus. Yeah. Like, I think it's honestly a perfect situation for him. I think, all right, let's make a little, we'll make a little gentleman's bet here.
Okay.
Let's both agree that he comes back.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
the bet would be, is it the exact same money? I'll say no.
I think based on the chatter that's out there, there's going to be some reworking going on here. I'm just saying, I'm not taking less if I were Aaron Donald. But based off Shetty's vibe yesterday when he brought this up to us, it does seem like that's where this is headed.
You know why I don't feel it's about money? I feel like this is a very special opportunity for Aaron Donald. And he walked away from a lot of money, which tells me that he didn't want to just keep playing for the money.
Yeah.
And now he has a chance to come back. And I'm not saying you need to lowball him or make him feel like he's lesser than, but you got to find a way to fit into the championship mentality of this roster. And I think if everybody is thinking about it a little bit in that way, then Aaron Donald should give a little for the opportunity. He's not the exact same guy. He's probably a very worthy player. And down for down, he's going to be very good if he's healthy. But my gut is that it's not going to be money that keeps him from not playing.
If you're telling me right now that the $31 million that you mentioned won't affect next year or beyond or anything like that, I don't really see an issue with that figure for 1 year. I really don't. I also am going to be very curious to see when he shows up. Because I have to... In his mind, he's probably like, "Yeah, I'm coming back, but do I really want to go through the training camp grind? Like, that's going to be fascinating for me to see because I think it's done. But is he going to show up in the next couple of days and go through the next 2, 3, 4 weeks of that?
We're not paying him $30 million to practice.
I don't think he wants to practice. Would you want to practice right now if you're Aaron Donald? I wouldn't.
I think you'd want to control your how much you do.
That's what I say, I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Listen, he's the first non-quarterback to make $30 million a year that said bye-bye. Like, I don't think that it's about money. I think it's about opportunity. Money should be there to some degree, but I'll bet somehow they rework this, that it's not just a, hey, we're going to pay you the last year of your contract when you walked away because now you want it 3 years later. They went out and got Myles Garrett. They feel very secure. Would he put it over the top perhaps in a way? Maybe. Yeah. But they're fine without him.
God, it's just if that happens, the parties playing together of Donald and Garrett and McDuffie on the outside, like that is a great place to be as a defense to where that quarterback's going to be sped up more times than not. If you're a corner, being able to sit on certain routes because you know that ball's got to come out now, like the Rams, they stay healthy. They are going to be an issue, and I know that's not really saying anything.
You take him over the field?
No, not over the field, right? It's just too much that goes injuries and all that because I don't think they're going to be 100% healthy all the way through. But, man, what's Vegas? I haven't even looked at the Super Bowl odds in a minute. I wonder.
They're the overwhelming favorite.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
they're like 5-1 and everybody else starts at 10.
Yeah. I'd take the field. Would you take them or the field?
I would take the field.
Okay.
Based on just the fact that you get all those bites at it.
Yeah.
And like you say, there's just too much to predict. Now, on paper, not thinking about injuries, I'd want, you gave me one team, I'm going to take them.
Mm-hmm. You were right. Yeah. Rams plus 550.
Yeah.
They're right behind them right now. Buffalo Bills plus 1,000.
Yeah. Well, the AFC is tougher.
Yeah. You've got.
By the way, that's the other reason that they're a big betting favorite is because the next closest NFC team is who?
The Seattle Seahawks at 11-1. You have four of the top six.
Yeah.
Super Bowl odds are AFC teams.
Like the SEC, let the AFC cannibalize themselves.
It's Buffalo, Baltimore, the Chargers, and the Chiefs.
The Diesel, John Riggins, on a Gold Jacket Thursday in 2 minutes.
Rothman.com.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Rothman and Ice present Gold Jacket Thursday.
All right, welcome back to a Gold Jacket Thursday here on Rothman and Ice. And I got to tell you, grew up in this era, and if you needed a yard, if you needed a catch, if you needed a touchdown when it mattered most, this man is at the top of any list in the history of pro football. Super Bowl 17. Ran through a Miami Dolphin like a bug on his windshield on his way to a Super Bowl game-winning 43-yard romp. He's the sixth overall pick in 71 out of the University of Kansas, a Rock Chalk Jayhawk, Hall of Fame class of 92, the man known as the Diesel, John Riggins. Riggo in the house.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, I have to make a small correction there. If you saw me now, you'd call me the Weasel. I look at myself in the mirror, and I'm going, I played football? You got to be kidding me. What was I thinking?
Hey, man, you did what it took when you had to do it. So if you're a normal, mortal human being now, that's okay. You've earned it. So you live the dream, you know, and my introduction is absolutely dead on. Fourth down in a Super Bowl, breaking a tackle for a game-winning touchdown. I don't. Maybe you dreamt it as a kid, and then you lived it. Give me a little thought about that when you were a kid, and what you aspired to be, and then what it turned out to be may have even been beyond your wildest dreams. I don't know.
Okay, you can go get a cup of coffee now because this will take a while. No, when I first came into the league in 1971, I didn't even know if I was going to last, even though I was a first-round draft pick. There's been plenty of guys. I didn't have the most confidence, I guess, is what I'm telling you. But I did have this one. The one thing I wanted to do was play in a Super Bowl. That's all. Didn't matter how the outcome. Wanted to get to play in that game. And so when we beat the Cowboys there at RFK, you know, you can imagine Washington beating Dallas at RFK in the championship game on your way to Pasadena. That game right there is right up there with the next game, which obviously was in Pasadena in the Super Bowl. So the thing here is that, you know, the game had been going, was actually, we were trailing, obviously, at that point in time, but the defense had been doing a good job, gave up a touchdown on a kickoff return, but the offense was moving the ball, but we just wasn't putting any points on the board. So you come up with a situation where it's, you know, fourth and one, I think the ball was on, what, Miami's 43-yard line. And then I tell people this, it all gets down to trust. And, you know, Joe Gibbs trusted his defense because they'd been playing so well that day to hold the Dolphins because he had a decision to make. Does he go for it? Does he punt the ball, try to get it down, you know, play field position at that point? I think there was about 10 minutes left in the game. But he decided to go for it because he also trusted his offensive lineman. And obviously he must have trusted me too. So we're sitting there, we go in the huddle. And I think Donnie Warren was out because I think he was injured, and they brought Clint Didier in to replace Donnie. And we're in the huddle, and, of course, the announcer's in, and the replacement, he's announcing it, and then coming into the game now, and I'm trying to think Clint's number. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But they go, Clint Didier, and his name is Didier, but, you know, I guess they assume it's the French pronunciation. And Didier is looking all around the stadium like, oh, all right, this is my moment. And Graham goes, damn it, Didier, get your ass in the huddle here. So, you know, that kind of started everything. Well, right before we run the play, Bill Arnsparger, who was the defensive coordinator for the Dolphins, he calls a timeout. And it's one of those deals because, you know, like I tell people, I'm pretty sure, and he told me later, he goes, well, that was a great idea. You know, this is years ago. He and I got to talking about it. But, you know, for me, it was one of those moments where, well, it was just a little bit longer because I guarantee anybody that's watching that game knew exactly what was getting ready to happen. I was going to get the football. The Dolphins knew it. We knew it. How many millions of fans were watching knew it. The only question was, am I going right or am I going left? Now, I didn't learn this till about 10 years ago. Clint told me, and if you ever watch that play again, which you probably will around Super Bowl time, Clint Didier goes in motion. It was fake something. I never knew much about what the, the formations and all. Didn't really affect what I had to do, so it was just more garbage for me to have to put in to my head, and I already had plenty there. But anyway, so if you watch the next time you see that, you'll see he goes across, and he really gives a great fake. And Don McNeil, who was falling across, slips. And that little bit of slippage, that's where, you know, the detail, they say, you know, genius is in the detail. He slips just enough. And I tell people this, you know, that if I didn't score a touchdown, then they should have fired me as soon as I got to the sideline. Because it was me, and, you know, Don McNeil gets just a glancing piece of me. And, you know, then it was just, you know, and I only had to run 40 yards, so, you know, it was pretty much all downhill. But as it turns out, it was certainly a pivotal point in that game, and I'm very glad that I was able to make that play.
Yeah, that's an awesome story right there, John. I want to, you know, go back just a few years prior to the Super Bowl, because I think one of the cool awards that the NFL hands out is the Comeback Player of the Year award. And in 1978, you brought home that award. Take us through that journey, what it was like to get to that point and inside that season and why you had so much success.
Well, it's interesting because when I first, you know, I was a free agent from the New York Jets in 1976. What was called the Roselle rule that was in the contract, where if you, and I played out my options with my option with the Jets because I was somewhat dissatisfied with my salary. Of course, I took a 10% pay cut that year in 1975. And I played out the option. I went around to five different teams, and you know, kind of like being high school recruit to go play college. Settled in Washington, but what I noticed to me is, you know, the coach there was a defensive coach, and you know, it was, and his pecking order was defense, special teams, I think Little Sisters of the Poor, American Red Cross, and then the offense. That was his list of priorities. So my first 2 years down there, and I just gained 1,000 yards with the Jets, was I was turned into a blocking back. So I got to tell you, about that point in my career, I was thinking there must be something else for me to do. But I also realized the importance of doing your job, and I did my job. I blocked and did everything I was asked, and I gained a lot of respect from my teammates because I think they knew that I had the horsepower. But it wasn't working out in this particular offense we had. So we were playing in 77, and I was injured down in Dallas, and so I had to set out. I think I missed about the rest of the season, basically. And it wasn't a severe knee injury, and I guess, you know, in all honesty, there wasn't anybody they could think of to give it to, so they gave it to me. But it was a long way back because they had a coaching change from 77 to 78. And the coach that became the offensive coordinator, I think he kind of understood my talent and gave me a bigger role, and that's kind of how that came about.
14 seasons, 175 games. John Riggins, Hall of Fame running back here with us on a Gold Jacket Thursday on Rothman and Ice. That 82 playoff run, 136 carries in four games. Can anybody win that way today? Does anybody even want to play that kind of power football unless you have a Derrick Henry or somebody that you can hand it to like they did you 30-plus times a game? Give me a little take on the era difference.
Well, you bring up great points there. And literally in the airport last night, my wife and I were talking about this. And I played for the fans. I mean, and I got to tell you this, you know, as much as I love football, if I could have sang, I'd have been a rock star. Just because you get to be in front of more fans, there's more gigs, and the other part of it, they think if you're really good, it pays pretty well, too. But I wasn't. You know, I was thinking, well, I don't know. I guess I could be a tight end. But you're right. Being a running back, I mean, they're a dime a dozen, like I was telling somebody this morning. I mean, you go down the pool hall on Sunday morning, get a couple, and go to the game, and you're good to go. Then my wife said quarterback, and I thought, you know what? Because in high school I was a quarterback, and I didn't push it because I actually wanted to be a running back. But I guess if I was left to my own devices now, I think I would have taken that job a little bit more seriously. But, yeah, I agree with you. There is no running game anymore, and I think the league has changed that for several reasons. One is throwing the football is more exciting, creates more, you know, more entertainment for the fans. It also cuts down on injuries because everybody's running parallel instead of perpendicular. They're not running at each other. They're running, like I said, side by side when you play that kind of game. Nobody knows how to drive block anymore. It's just a matter of, it's almost like basketball. You stand up and screen your man off. So it's a completely different game. I don't think I'd be kind of useless as a running back nowadays because they're not needed. So I'd have to come back as a quarterback.
Yeah, interesting. All right. How did it affect you emotionally? You were the one that did the flea flicker handoff back to Theismann, correct, with the injury? How did that affect you emotionally? I don't even know if you saw it. You probably just heard it. And then Lawrence waving medical staff over. What do you remember from how that affected you, the team, the whole deal?
Next man up, and you know, the show must go on. But I remember when I was a sophomore in college, I remember I was on the, I was an up back on a punt team. ran down, covered the punt, came back, and I noticed the safety on the, you know, the guy that protects the punter, you know, he was down on the ground, writhing on the ground, and I went up there, and basically he had what would turn out to be the same injury as Theisen. So I went up there and I looked and I saw how his shin went down, and then it almost was like before it got to his ankle, there was a right turn. There was a right ankle, a right angle there. Mm. And after that, I figured, you know, because you kind of lose your zeal for the game when you see stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I, at that point, I realized, well, I'm not going over and look at fallen teammates. I'm just going to go over to the bench. For one, well, in this case, you know, well, actually, I think it was fourth down or it was third down, and I think that, you know, that they had to punt the football. Sure. But yeah, I didn't get too involved. It felt bad for Joe, but like I said, the show goes on.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You gave a lot of yourself to this game. You earned the ultimate honor of being a Hall of Famer. I got to tell you, aim high and shoot straight. Hell of a speech, Riggo. I always remembered the quote, and I'm glad you're doing well.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you for having me on.
You got it. John Riggins. Not a real X's and O's guy, just a guy that lined it up and you handed it to him. He adjusted to what the defense was doing for 14 seasons. And he had 160 some odd yards in a Super Bowl and a game winning touchdown and just a legendary player.
It's great talking to him. You look at some of the old pictures of him and it's just, I don't need anything but my bare hands to tote the rock right here. Just rocking that number 44, just as old school as it gets, but just a hell of a player. It's cool to talk to him.
The Diesel. NFL football is officially back in 7 days, 5 hours, 17 minutes, and 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hall of Fame game next Thursday.
We back, baby.
Arizona and Carolina. Are we really back?
We're getting nothing.
We're really back.
We ain't getting, by
yeah,
way,
I know. Like if it was
Carolina,
a beefier game, I would be like, okay, maybe we are back.
TLC's sneaky team from last year, they're going through it injury-wise right now, getting crushed by some massive injuries. So we'll see if a playoff team that had, I think, a good showing against the Rams could figure it out.
Come back with Tell the Truth, Roth.
Buckeye football camp is coming, and our team of fan personalities will be there live. All the sweaty sack fun starts Thursday, August 6th. For tickets, head to Ticketmaster.com. Your home of the Buckeyes.
One, two, three.
The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
Tell the Truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
All right, TLC, take us home, my man.
All right, I saw an interesting tweet from Le'Veon Bell.
I haven't heard that name in a little minute.
Well,
yeah, he was in the news when you were out.
You haven't been catching the police blotters then. However, this has nothing to do with that. This is interesting regardless.
Wait, what did he do real quick? Honestly, I didn't.
It's alleged he
is there domestic
skipped
violence?
Out. No, I think he skipped out on some child support potentially, allegedly. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, TLC. Go ahead. My bad.
Other problems in the home.
Gotcha. Noted. You know.
But anyway, he tweets out, how many push-ups should a grown man be able to do bare minimum?
So
I like
this
question.
All right. This is a very interesting question. And I've thought about this. And I don't think you'll be able to do this the rest of your life. There's no way you can. But there was a period of time that I felt that you should be able, like when you get into middle-aged, that it'd be great if you could do the amount of push-ups of your age. Now, eventually...
That would be great.
Like I said, eventually you will tap out.
Correct.
And you'll be done. But now, you're talking about in one sitting, right? Like one time.
Yep, one
continuously.
Set.
And I think up until you're probably in your... I think up until 40, you could probably get this done. And depending on what kind of shape you're in, you could probably get this into your mid to high 40s, I bet. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I think 50, you'd probably tap out. But it was always what I strived. Like if you were like 38, can you do 38 consecutive push? Like it was that kind of a deal for me. So to answer your question, that's the only place I've gone to in my mind, because it's got to be age related.
Read the question for me one more time, TLC.
How many push-ups should a grown man be able to do bare minimum?
The number
grown man is such a broad
spectrum of it. Like I've got 15. So if you're between the ages, let's call it 20 to 60, I think you should be able to pull off 15 push-ups.
All right. So when you say the push-up, what is your I don't know what a legal official push-up is. Does the chest have to hit the
90 degrees?
90 degrees in a slight pause at the bottom.
How do you know exactly what the 90 degrees is, Mr. Protractor? Do you have, like...
You can feel
How will we know? Like...
You turn your arm into an L.
Okay. I think 15's a damn good number. I kind of like that.
Okay, I'm not...
Because I think it's enough where it's going to be tough.
Uh-huh.
And a grown average man...
Yeah.
From an athletic background... Should be able to do that.
You gotta. That's the qualifier, an athletic background.
I just think if you've played sports in your life, and maybe even if you haven't,
you can pull off 15.
Yeah. All right, 15 is the number.
I like that. You set a new goal for me. My goal in life is to be able to do 50 push-ups on my 50th birthday. Yeah.
But you've got to do
knock on wood
every
I
year.
I can't guarantee that anybody in the world will be alive Sunday, so I can't guarantee it will be on our roster on Sunday.
Who? What? That's
Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, well, he's got his own issues. By the way, tell the truth. I don't know all the details of the story, so I don't want to speak completely out of school here. But he went with the "I dropped my phone."
That was,
and then he was fishing around for it while he was driving.
That's what I saw.
All right.
That's what I saw.
Makes me feel like he was probably on it.
Dropped it.
Or never dropped it. Was just on it. Because it's a lot, comes across better if you said you dropped it than whether you were actively reading it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they put out that report like 11 days after it actually happened or something like that. So there's a lot of speculation that there's something else besides the story that they're telling. But anyway, I like that. 50 push-ups on my 50th birthday.
I'm doing that tomorrow morning.
Yeah, but then it's 30 on 30, 40 on 40. Like,
you gotta do this tomorrow, TLC. I'm knocking 35 out in a row tomorrow morning.
Well, you only have to do it on your birthday.
You have until February 1st.
Yeah, you don't have to.
I just want
to
see if I can do it tomorrow. And then I'll report back.
Do your age.
Yeah, okay. I can pull that off. I just want to see if I can do it.
I was not here on Monday, but I received a text that we had an interesting conversation in my absence. Because I was told that you guys were having a debate about whether the average human being could catch a major league fly ball.
Oh, yes, because we stumbled into, I think I had maybe Jacob Mizorowski and Party, and then AR brought up that Scotty Vegas said that he believed that he could make contact with him or any major league pitcher.
He originally started, yes, I fell off the chair like you just did. He said he could make contact.
The master.
Nobody beats the Miz. That he could make contact on a major league pitcher.
What?
And I said, exactly. It was so absurd. I mean, we couldn't even come up with a theory, like even a home run derby, kind of like how many swings you'd get, how many outs you'd get. Could you take 20 pitches? I couldn't even construct.
Yeah. And then I think that's how that came about.
And I said, you know what? I don't even know if you could make contact on a really good high school pitcher.
No. So, and then that led me to say, my young dogs up at Ripple Baseball, especially J-Pav's son.
They're ready.
His son, Mason, he can't even touch him right now.
I can make contact off of a really good high school pitcher. I'm not saying that I'm, like, driving it, you know, double into the gap. Yeah. I can make
foul
contact.
One off?
Yeah, of course. I can foul one
Cue
off.
Cue ball one off.
Young dudes are nasty, though. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I know. And then the other part is, if you've never played baseball and you dig in against somebody throwing 80+,
you stand no chance.
Like, literally, I don't even think. I guess you'd have to have your comp. You'd have to be willing to take a
step in with the Miz.
Take one in the ribs. Like,
dude, big leaguers can't even hit.
Okay,
him.
That's right. It was funny. But as far as then, Maddie brought up the shagging of the fly balls, and I'm like, oh, that's brutal. You can't just catch a fly ball.
And then Zeke told us a story about how he couldn't catch a softball.
Yes.
And it's just, that's how we got there. He couldn't.
Said he went the whole season. And it was a 12-inch softball with a glove.
It's tough.
I can 1,000%. Now, I can't go chase it down to the warning track and, like, catch it up against the wall, like, trying to rob a home run.
Yeah. That's
you guys can do that. We got to go.
There's a fly ball to left field. Mm-hmm. I can catch it.
There's Truth for the Day, Common Man and Timmy coming up next. Adam Rittenberg joins the boys at 5:30 live from Chicago.
In a major league game.
Talk to you tomorrow at high noon. Rothman.